I could get used to this. We're going way back today. 56 years to this day in 1968 when Marvin Gaye released I Heard It Through the Grapevine. It became his first U.S. number one single. Now, you probably know Marvin Gaye was not the first to record the song. Smokey Robinson and the Miracles did it, as well as Gladys Knight and the Pips. But it was Marvin Gaye on this day in 1968 that I Heard It Through the Grapevine. His rendition was released. It would go on to be his first number one single on the U.S. charts. This day is Wednesday, the 30th of October, the day before Halloween. Why is Halloween on a Thursday? Like, why haven't we figured this out yet? We do so many things with so much intelligence and thought these days. Why we have not moved Halloween to the last Saturday in October or the closest Saturday to the 31st? I haven't the foggiest, but that's okay. It's going to be nice weather for Halloween tomorrow. 6 minutes after nine on this Wednesday morning. And thank you very much for stopping by, making time for the show. I always appreciate that you are here. I recognize that there are many things competing for your time, and the fact that you spend some of that time with us really does mean a lot. I don't know about you, but I couldn't help but notice that it's taking a long time for the daylight to show up in the mornings these days, isn't it? It's like 7:30 going on 8 o'clock before it gets bright outside. Of course, that's why we're going to change the clocks this weekend, right? Which is another one of those things where all these years later, I just can't figure it out. But we will fall back that hour. So now, as of next week, it'll be brighter a little bit earlier in the morning, but we'll be having dinner in the dark and wondering what in HE double hockey sticks we are doing with our lives. A couple of questions. To start the show today, I don't mean to make it all pop quizzy on you, but let's try you out. Question number one, have the Kitchener Rangers stopped winning hockey games yet? Hello? Rangers, have they stopped winning hockey games yet? Maybe my buddy and broadcast partner, Paul Fixter, has the answer to that.
I think one word describes the Rangers' play, Mike: impressive. To be number one in the league is impressive, and they've done it at almost a quarter pole. I know it's not important to the coaching staff at this point in the season to be number one, more so at the end of the year, but they are number one and they should take pride in that.
There you go. If they're number one, there's only one thing that probably possibly could have happened last night, right? That's right. The Rangers won again. Ho-hum, seven in a row and the entire month of October. The entire month, 12 games played, zero regulation losses. So the answer to the question is, no, the Kitchener Rangers have not yet stopped winning hockey games. The other question I have for you this morning is this. Has the city of Cambridge yet changed the way it's reporting its tax increase? Are they still pushing the 1.26% number when the actual number is 4.68%? Curious. Has anyone...
Do the math.
You do the math on that there, and you can change the way you're collecting stormwater, but It's still a 4.68% increase when you
do the math.
So, has Cambridge yet started reporting the actual number, or is their headline number still 1.26%? Okay, questions that I have as we start the show today.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 9, 10.
Let's get to your Farwell Show 5 for this Wednesday morning. Number one, a Waterloo High School student has done something pretty remarkable. Every year, the University of Waterloo hosts the Sir Isaac Newton exam in the Department of Physics and Astronomy. And this year, Xander Lee, a student at Laurel Heights Secondary School in Waterloo, posted the highest score, not just in the school or even just in the region, but in the entire world. The test included more than 1,200 students from outside Canada, and Xander's score of 3,076 was the highest score in the world. Number two on your Farwell Show 5 this morning, Communitech is searching for its next CEO. The Startup Center in downtown Kitchener has announced that Chris Albinson has stepped down as CEO after 3.5 years. Jennifer Gruber, who is the Chief Financial Officer at Communitech, will step into the CEO's role on an interim basis. Number three on your Farwell Show 5 today, Loose Leaf Collection starts this week in Waterloo, and the city is reminding residents the service is only for street tree leaves, which are the trees on your boulevard. So don't be like my buddy who puts the leaves from his backyard on a tarp and drags them out to the front to drop them at the curb for curbside collection. My buddy's a good guy. But you ought not do that. The city of Waterloo is also reminding us of the option of leaving your leaves where they are, because don't you know they provide winter shelter for pollinators and they enrich the soil. We can leave our leaves. Number four on your Farwell Show 5 this morning, Ontario Premier Doug Ford is defending the $200 rebate checks that will be delivered to every Ontarian, saying that his government has put the province in a position to deliver the checks next year.
The difference between our party and the Liberals and NDP, they believe in one thing: tax the taxpayers to death, drive companies out of this province. We've taken a different approach. That's why there's 860,000 people working today that weren't working under the Liberal regime. They lost 300,000 jobs.
And number five on your Farwell Show 5 this morning, Democratic presidential nominee Kamala Harris used her closing argument ahead of next week's U.S. election to remind voters of the choice that lies ahead.
We know who Donald Trump is. He is the person who stood at this very spot nearly 4 years ago and sent an armed mob to the United States Capitol to overturn the will of the people in a free and fair election. An election that he knew he lost. It is time to turn the page on the drama and the conflict, the fear and division. It is time for a new generation of leadership in America. And I am ready to offer that leadership as the next president of the United States of America.
They will go to the polls in the United States of God Bless America next Tuesday, the 5th. Of November. And that is your Farwell Show 5 for this Wednesday morning. You know, Doug Ford was not only defending those $200 rebate checks yesterday. Oh, no. He had something to say about the Big City Mayor's Caucus meeting last week and how we might go about combating homelessness in this province. In fact, the Premier is putting that football right back into the local mayor's side of the field. We'll talk about it. I'll share the audio coming up. This is the Mike Farwell Show on 570 News Radio. So we will, of course, learn more in today's fall economic statement about those $200 rebate checks. But the goodies are already at least partly spilling out of the bag. And if you do not think that we're going to have a provincial election next spring or summer, can I point you in the direction of some swampland in Florida I may have for sale for you? Oh, it's coming. And the little bribe slash rebate check, it's just another indication that the early election is coming in Ontario. Here's something that caught my ear, though, particularly because it references a court decision on an encampment in the city of Kitchener when the region of Waterloo was trying to figure out its way around the encampment at Weber and Victoria. And you have heard this ruling referenced a number of times, that ruling from Justice Michael Valente, who essentially said it is unconstitutional for you to remove somebody from the place that they are living, i.e. an encampment, if you do not have adequate shelter for them. Unless you have the place for them to go, you must leave them. It is their right to stay in the place that they are. And while talking about the rebate checks yesterday, among other things, the premier was making an announcement. He took questions from reporters. He talked about the rebate checks and why he thinks it's okay that the province is spending $3 billion on this. And then the premier was asked about the Ontario Big City Mayor's Caucus meeting the other week. We've talked about it on this show. The idea of involuntary treatment was raised, creating the space in our system so that people who cannot help themselves, well, we can decide for them that here's the help they need and send them to that place to get the help. And this led to a pretty intense discussion and debate at the Big City Mayor's Caucus meeting last week. And in fact, the chair of that caucus, Marianne Mead Ward, who's the mayor of Burlington, said difficult conversations need to be had. I know the mayor of Oshawa has been quite clear, saying the provincial and federal governments are going to have to get uncomfortable with the idea of making decisions like this. Well, when asked about it yesterday, Premier Ford seemed to be punting the football back into the city's court.
Well, I talked to many of the big city mayors. You know, first of all, there was a ruling in Waterloo from the court saying you have to put someone into a shelter. That's fine. And they get a choice. So they go into a shelter, they look around, I don't like it. Well, that's a problem. If there's a roof over their heads, you know, they have to do it. But I have an idea. Why don't the big city mayors actually put in writing that they want the province to change the homeless program, make sure that we move the homeless along, and why don't they put in, use the notwithstanding clause or something like that. That's what they should be doing, rather than just kind of going up to the edge. Let's see if they have the backbone to do it. If they really want the homeless situation to improve, because I'll tell you, I get endless calls about people camping out in the parks, needles being all over the park. They're scared to put their kids out in the park by themselves, no matter what age it is, and we have to make a move. Big city mayors, you want to get it done? I need that letter.
Well, there you go. And the big city mayors did talk about this. They couldn't arrive at consensus on it, so they came out with a softened motion. But by the sounds of what the premier is saying, if the mayors step up, it's up to the cities now to send this letter to give this direction to the province to invoke the notwithstanding clause that would override those charter rights upheld in that court ruling based on the encampment in Waterloo Region. And we could change the way we deal with the homeless in this province. So the premier seems to think it's up to the cities to collectively come together, agree on that letter, and then ask the province to invoke the notwithstanding clause. This is the Mike Farwell Show on 570 News Radio. I just poked my head into the newsroom here at 570 News Radio, not to check on the hard work that the team is doing. I know they're always doing hard work in there, covering the stories that matter to you. But what took me to the newsroom this morning was the big bowl of candy that was brought in yesterday. And frankly, I'm a little disappointed in my colleagues that there is any candy at all left in said bowl. However, I was quite pleased to find that some of the good candy was still there. Got myself a little box of Smarties, got myself an Aero bar. There were some better bars yesterday, but the bottom line is there is still chocolate in the bowl. And I have no shame. Even if it wasn't Halloween time, I would gladly eat chocolate at 9:27 in the morning. Here's what I noticed, though. Well, the best chocolate bars, in my opinion, like I like a Kit Kat. They were in there yesterday. The Aero and the Smarties, it's fine. It's chocolate. But here's what I noticed. And Devin Robertson, our guy on the other side of the glass, I'm sure you won't be surprised by this either, right? The majority of the candy left in that bowl, most of it, I found a couple of pieces of chocolate. There's still a couple more. But most of what's left in that bowl, Rockets. Worst candy ever. Am I wrong or am I right?
No, I think you hit the nail on the head there.
Of course, and there's proof. Like, now we have proof undeniable that rockets are garbage. In fact, what we should do with rockets is put them onto a rocket ship and blast them off into outer space.
I know this isn't true, but from my taste buds, I assume it's just what we do with leftover chalk. I think we just package up the chalk.
Thank you.
And sell it as candy.
Exactly.
Why don't we launch it into space? I can't think of it. I don't want to eat it.
Sister Helene and all of those chalkboards I had to clean in grade 4 at St. Anne's Elementary School. All of those memories come flooding back every time I even look at a package of rockets. I'm telling you right now, too, if you hand out rockets to trick-or-treaters tomorrow night, they will egg your house. And you'll deserve it. I'm sorry. But, like, you got to be accountable for your decisions. Do clown things, get clown results. Don't give out rockets. They're terrible.
Oh, I couldn't agree more.
All right. I'm glad this is why we get along as well as we do. You know what else I learned this morning while reading my papers is that shrinkflation has even hit the little itty-bitty chocolate bars that we're handing out now. So they're even smaller. Like, they've always been small. Now they're even smaller than they used to be.
That's possible.
That's what I thought. But then I realized I was at an event the other night and they had some Halloween candy in various bowls on various tables, which was nice. You know, grab a little something. I'm not even making this up. This is a true story. I picked up a bag of peanut M&Ms. There were three M&Ms in the bag. Three.
Three.
Three. You can count them on one hand and you don't even need all your digits. Three M&Ms in one bag. Shrinkflation has also come for your Halloween candy.
Nothing is sacred.
Nothing is sacred. You have to give the kids even more now tomorrow night. Just don't give them rockets. An update from the 570 News Center is coming up, and then a demand for a traffic signal is growing in South Cambridge at an intersection residents there say is too dangerous as it is. We'll talk about it coming up on the Mike Farwell Show. This is 570 News Radio. There is an intersection in South Cambridge, and this is an intersection we have talked about before. It's in an area known as Little Corners. It's Branchton Road, Dundas Street South. Basically, as you're heading out of Cambridge, if you want to make that trek towards Rockwood, Hamilton, etc. And the area has grown so much, and the traffic moves so quickly that residents are concerned if something doesn't get done soon, there will be a fatality in the area. Now, I remember some time ago talking directly to Ward 7 counselor in Cambridge, Scott Hamilton, about this very issue. He, too, had raised the concern. There is a school in the area. People are trying to cross the street, and it's fast-moving traffic, especially as people accelerate to get out of town. And now residents in the area have created a petition that is appealing to the city to create some necessary change here. The petition began about a week ago, and it is now approaching 500 signatures. We are working on connecting with the organizer of that petition, but wouldn't you know, as luck would have it, and this is never a good thing for a talk radio station, but unfortunately, we are having difficulty calling out from our phone lines here at the radio station. I'm just telling you that in the interests of transparency, because that's what we do. So we are unable to connect to our guest. I have sent her an email in hopes that she can call in to us. If you want to participate in the show, that's still working. You can still call in to us, but we are unable to make a call out from our radio station currently. So that's why I'm unable to get the guest on the phone at this moment. However, this particular area of Little's Corners in Cambridge is not the only area that has been flagged as concerning when it comes to the need for traffic calming. We talked about this on the show last week with Mayor Joe Nowak in Wellesley Township after residents showed up at a Wellesley Township council meeting to appeal for change to an intersection that they believe is also dangerous. And Caressa Madison was leading that charge at Wellesley Council to appeal for change in her neighborhood.
In the last 10 years, from July 24, 2014 to present, there have been a total of 18 collisions at this said intersection. Collisions with injuries were 4 of 18, and collisions with property damage were 14 of 18. This information is from the Waterloo Regional Police Services. So far in 2024, 3 accidents have occurred. March 23rd, a serious collision where a vehicle landed 50-plus yards onto private property at 2181 Maplewood. The intersection was closed for a period of time. July 20th, a collision involving 2 vehicles. And September 28th, another collision involving 3 vehicles. All accidents required police and tow truck services. In this area of approximately 1.5 kilometers radius, there is a YMCA camp. Many cyclists, horse and buggies, farm equipment, runners, joggers, walkers, children playing, some with special needs, seniors walking, some with dementia, and or walkers. We all share the road, which have no or very little shoulders, and none of these roads have sidewalks. Also, there are 3 different school buses which cross the intersection twice daily, Monday to Friday, during the school year. I and many of my neighbors have nearly been hit numerous times while out walking. It can be very dangerous and alarming. It boggles my mind that most drivers do not slow down or even move over safely as they are required to do so. We have a few traffic calming measure suggestions to stop or reduce speeding. 1, implement community safety zones in all 3 50-kilometer zones on Hergott South, Maplewood, and Hessenstrasse, and then request police monitor and enforce it, if possible. Make the intersection a 4-way stop and install bigger stop signs.
There you go. Make the intersection a 4-way stop. Install bigger stop signs. Mayor Joe Nowak, when he was on the show last week, wasn't sure that a 4-way stop would necessarily be a solution in the area. The bottom line is it's not just Little's Corners, Branchton Road, Dundas Street South in Cambridge. It's also in Wellesley Township. And I am willing to bet that if you could wave your magic wand and change an intersection or make it safer in this region, you could find one or several. I know they've done work on it, but I still think Shaunce Hill / Shaunce Hell, as I like to call it, is a disaster as it stands. I can't even imagine what it's going to be like when we add the next phase of light rail to that particular area. It's not an area I enjoy. Let's just put it that way. I don't know what more you can do there, but if I could wave a magic wand and improve something, that would be it. And hey, how about Trussler Road at the expressway, not far from us here on Iron Needles, where there's a very dangerous turn that people are forced to make across fast-moving traffic and multiple lanes. Apparently, it's been identified as a priority for the region, but it's not yet being addressed. We have been able to connect with our guest from Cambridge to tell us more about her concerns in the Branchton Road, Dundas Street area of Cambridge. We'll talk to her right after this quick timeout on the Mike Farwell Show. This is 570 News Radio. All right, let's speak to the organizer of that petition and find out what the concerns are in South Cambridge. Esmeralda Tavares joins us on the program. Esmeralda, I'm so sorry for making you jump through hoops to get here this morning. Thank you for calling in and being a part of the show.
No problem. Good morning.
Good morning. So what is it that you're seeing in your neighborhood in the Branchton Road, Dundas Street area that is causing you concern?
Well, that intersection there at Highway 8 and Branchton Road seems to be getting busier now, especially with the new subdivision across the street and the new subdivision down the road at Atwater Drive. People just kind of, race through there. They don't abide by the speed limit that reduces down to 60. So anyone pulling left on Branchton Road onto Highway 8 can sit there for 10 minutes, if not more, depending on the time of day, to try to make a left. Last week, early on, I think it was either Monday or Tuesday, there was a collision there at that corner that the car actually caught fire. So at that point is when I decided, something needs to be done. So I decided to put this petition together and get local residents to sign it to see if we can try to push the region to do something. I know a roundabout seems to be more of a logical thing from people's comments that I've been getting. But right now the lights seem to be something that'd be quicker to install just to get the safety part of it going.
Have you had the opportunity to speak to any of our elected officials, be it municipal or regional councillors, about these concerns?
I haven't personally, but I've had other people that have reached out to them that have contacted me and told me that they reached out to them. And unfortunately, the region has done nothing about it. I had somebody reach out to me through via message and said that the day of the accident that they were going to email them, and they did. And they basically, the region basically told them that they are going to be doing some type of work there next year, and they were putting lights in early 2025. But I just feel that something needs to be done sooner, especially with, snow coming. Cars are not able to stop as quick, obviously, especially when they're coming in high speeds, coming from Hamilton Way. Something needs to be done there before, a fatality happens.
Yeah, I can certainly understand that concern. I know the area pretty well, and waiting even another year seems like a long way off for those of you who are dealing with this on a regular basis. Are there concerns, Esmeralda, beyond just the difficulty for vehicles making those turns and being stuck there? What about pedestrians or other people engaging in active transportation in the area?
Well, the subdivision across the street, South Point, across from Branchton Road, that's still developing. Like, it's not fully developed. And once the city puts in the sports complex area, that's going to cause more foot traffic. So trying to cross, from Branchton Road to that area for people that don't drive because they want to go to the complex or just go into that neighborhood for whatever reason, there's no way you can cross. There's just no way you can cross. So they need to put something in place for pedestrians that are walking as well, and especially for the kids that are going to Moffat Creek School. There's there for them to cross safely as well.
What is the general feeling in the area from you and others in terms of what it's like in the area now? Do you have to find, workarounds to find safer ways, to find quicker ways? How do you deal with this?
Well, there's a lot of people that just avoid Branchton Road and Highway 8, especially during certain hours. In the morning, when people are dropping off their kids, people going into work, it becomes busier. During the day, it's not as busy. And then in the evening, of course, people coming home from work and, getting out of school and stuff. So, yeah, it just becomes busy. There's certain times that it's busier and it's more difficult. So people do avoid. Some people do avoid that intersection. But now Myers Road also is closed one way, so you can only go one way towards, like if you're coming on Branchton Road, going towards Holy Spirit School, you can't come from Holy Spirit to Branchton because it's closed now. So you're just pretty well veering around, detouring, trying to get around to avoid this intersection. So it's just not, if they had something in place there, then people can get to where they're going to safely.
I hope that your advocacy leads to some action, Esmeralda. Thank you very much for making time for the show this morning.
Thank you very much for having me.
Esmeralda Tavares has organized a petition asking that a traffic signal be installed in the Little's Corners area, Branchton Road, Highway 8, Dundas Street South, in that area of Cambridge. This is an ongoing issue in the area. And I know, because we've talked to him about it before, that Ward 7 councillor in Cambridge, Scott Hamilton, whose ward encompasses this area, has been appealing to the region for action here. And as Esmeralda points out, another year of waiting doesn't feel like there's an urgent enough priority attached to this. Frankly, this is another one of those two-tier municipal government issues that really chafes my chaps, because you've got a municipal councillor who's saying this is something that we need, and the region is like, yeah, we'll get there. We'll get there. I mean, next year. Is that enough of a priority? I honestly wonder why we don't have something that can be done as an interim traffic control, right? This was brought up on the show before. There are those mobile, almost, traffic signals that can be installed when construction's happening, for example. Could we do something like that on an interim basis until the full plan and the required work can be implemented? And I'm with Esmeralda, too. Why don't we just look at a signal as opposed to the extensive work and expense that comes with a roundabout? Something's got to get there to improve not only safety, but traffic flow. If you could wave your magic wand, is there an area, an intersection in the region that you would like to see improvements made at? I mentioned Sean's Hell and Trussler Road at the expressway earlier. Clearly, there are concerns at Branchton Road and Highway 8 in Cambridge. What do you see in your regular travels that you would like to see improved? Let me know on the Mike Farwell Show. This is 570 News Radio.
The region basically told them that they are going to be doing some type of work there next year, and they were putting lights in early 2025. But I just feel that something needs to be done sooner, especially with snow coming. Cars are not able to stop as quick, obviously, especially when they're coming in high speeds. Something needs to be done there before a fatality happens.
Esmeralda Tavares has organized a petition appealing for a traffic signal at the intersection of Branchton Road and Highway 8 in Cambridge. Not only is it incredibly difficult for vehicles wanting to make a turn onto Branchton or onto Highway 8 because of the fast-moving traffic coming back from the Hamilton area, for example, but it's just an area that's growing with a new subdivision being built and the increased foot traffic, schools, the new recreation complex that's being built there. It's a very fast-growing area. It doesn't seem as though our traffic calming measures or our traffic control measures have kept pace. You can find the petition at change.org. It is approaching 500 electronic signatures since it was began. But I think Esmeralda and her neighbors in the area make a pretty strong case for why this needs to be done. And I'm not sure that 2025 is an urgent enough priority. However, we'll keep our eyes and ears on the area. Speaking of eyes on things, I'll tell you what, I had to do a double take when I got to the Kitchener Rangers game last night, and I was getting set up for the broadcast in our booth at the Memorial Auditorium, and this gentleman comes walking up the stairs, and he was carrying a very official-looking 570 News Radio microphone. I mean, he had the logo perfect, and it looked about as official as anything you'd ever want to see. He also had put on a pair of glasses and a skull cap. And I wasn't sure how I really felt about the skull cap, because when I put the pieces together, I realized that he came to the Rangers game last night on their Halloween-themed night dressed as me. So again, I wasn't quite sure how I felt about the skull cap, but then I realized, well, I mean, what are you going to do? If you're going to dress up as me, you can't have a full head of hair. There's no question about that. So I shared the picture on our Facebook page. If you have not yet seen it and would like to, you can. And if you're not following along on Facebook, I mean, there's some fun stuff there every once in a while, you know. Facebook.com/The Mike Farwell Show. The most common comment that I received both in person at the game last night, because this guy was showing up all over the place. I kept getting pictures sent to me from people who had pictures taken with the guy dressed as me at the game. The most common comment I got, he's a lot taller than you, Farwell. I guess we've moved on from you have no hair to you're really short. This is the Mike Farwell Show, times two on 570 News Radio. It's like Canada's very own unicorn. It's been talked about for decades, and it was even the subject of an editorial cartoon in the morning paper, along with Sasquatch and Ogopogo. Canadian figments of imagination include the high-speed train. As I said, it's been talked about for decades. It's being talked about again, and Justin Ling, who is a freelance journalist, joins us on the show to talk more about it. Justin, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Where are we at currently? Because I understand this Liberal government under Justin Trudeau has at least been thinking about bringing a plan for high-speed rail service back to the surface here.
Yeah, I mean, I understand people are skeptical. I understand people look at this as though it's a mythical creature, but I'm here to tell you that at least at the moment, this idea is genuinely moving ahead. Now, you've probably seen the headlines a bunch of times over the last decade. Government announces plans, government announces study, government announces feasibility study, right? We're really primed to look at these, roll our eyes and say, well, it's never going to happen. And that is basically where we were at until last year, maybe late 2022, when the government decided to start a kind of purpose-built crown corporation, originally inside Via Rail, later got spun off to be its own independent corporation. It's called Via HFR, High Frequency Rail, and it was tasked with coming up with a plan on how to do this properly. They were given a couple of marching orders. They were told any route you come up with must go through Quebec City, Trois-Rivières, Montreal, Ottawa, Peterborough, Toronto, and it must be reliable, faster, and eventually they said it must be a private option. Again, I understand the skepticism about that, and I was skeptical too. They put out a request to private industry. They got back three consortia bidding on the project. All three are very, very serious organizations, complete with the public rail companies for Spain, for Italy. We have Air Canada in there, weirdly enough, the rebranded SNC-Lavalin, anyway, there's a whole bunch of others. Suffice it to say, we expect that in the next couple of weeks, a winner is going to be announced. They're going to start working with Via HFR for the next few years on a plan. They're going to start the studies. They're going to start consultations. They're going to start maybe even buying up land. And we'll know in the next few years if Ottawa is ready to pony up the billions of dollars it will take to actually start building this thing.
Why should the federal government pony up those billions of dollars?
Yeah, I mean, listen, there's so many good reasons, right? I mean, if we actually want to reduce our carbon emissions and get to a net zero country, it's going to require driving less and flying less. That is unavoidable. It's inescapable. It's plainly true. This new high-speed, high-frequency rail would be fully electric. Good place to start. It's also true that we just do not have the airport capacity or even the road capacity to move people along the Windsor-Quebec corridor at present, right? Like, our airports are stuffed and flights are getting, as I'm sure everybody knows, more and more expensive. As it stands, Via Rail, the service we have now, is not great. And it's getting worse. And that is largely because our passenger trains have to share tracks with freight rail. This plan would see us building about 1,000 kilometers of brand new rail just for passenger trains. So it would make things considerably faster, easier, and if the business case is there, significantly cheaper. Now, on top of that, we are looking at a housing crisis that is going to require that we find new places for people to live. We need to unlock new segments of the country. We need to make certain communities more accessible and usable for people to get around, whether that's Peterborough, whether that's Kitchener, whether that's Oshawa or elsewhere. And finally, it's going to be unbelievably important as we try and improve transit in our cities, building new tracks, building new stations, building new infrastructure is going to be incredibly helpful as we try and improve GO Train service, as we try and improve service around Quebec City and Montreal and elsewhere. This is the kind of project we're going to need if we want to create these sort of public transit linkages that will make Canada an actual transit hub, and that will make it possible to get around much more efficiently, quickly, and cheaply.
This idea, of course, coming forward late in the life, let's say, of this particular Liberal government, at some time in the next 12 months, we'll be going to a federal election. Could a change in government scuttle the plan?
Yeah, absolutely. But it doesn't have to. I mean, listen, even if there's not a change in government, this could still get scuttled, right? It's going to require billions of dollars. I mean, the initial estimate put it somewhere in the ballpark of $12 billion. I think realistically it's going to be much higher than that, and I think we should be very upfront about the cost as opposed to trying to downplay it. This is going to be an expensive thing. It's going to require a lot of acquiring land, building, dealing with First Nations. There's a whole bunch of stuff that has to go into it. The way in which the Liberals have approached it is to do it as a public-private partnership. They want these companies to come in and finance a big chunk of the project for some returns somewhere on the back end. I make the argument in the Toronto Star, that's a bad idea. We should do it as a fully public project. We should own the rail. We should own the service. We should operate it as Via Rail. We should recognize that the benefits from this project are not necessarily financial, although the project will probably pay for itself in time. The benefits are to the country, to the environment, to the people who will like to have a reliable train service connecting huge swaths of the country. But that's not the only way to do it. And this is the pitch I make in the Star. Even if Pierre Poilievre comes in, even if he hopes to balance the budget, there's still a way to do this that will not require as much capital from the federal government. There is a private version of this plan, fully private, that could work. You're seeing Danielle Smith in Alberta consider a version of a private rail service between Edmonton and Calgary. So I don't think it has to die, but I also think it's going to require us getting a little more excited about it, a little more optimistic that it's possible, and to start actually pushing for this to move from dream into reality, and for us to start accepting that this is the kind of project we need if Canada is going to be a livable country into the 21st century.
I quite frankly could not agree with you more, and I appreciate you putting forward the argument and making time for the show this morning, Justin. Thank you very much for being here.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Justin Ling is a freelance journalist, and as I said right there, I could not possibly agree more. Justin makes the argument in his op-ed, and I'll quote from it, "Why not drop the pretense and just accept that passenger rail, like public transit, is something that delivers enough reward to the public that it's worth having governments pay for?" As much as I am a penny pincher, or since we took away the pennies, the nickel rubber, I'll rub two nickels together until they turn into a dime, I will do that. But this is something that I can get behind as publicly funded infrastructure. I would describe it as critically important for today and for tomorrow. I can't even imagine the scope. I confess to not having a lot of faith in our ability to do big things, great things, but this would be significant and significantly important. What do you think about high-speed, high-frequency rail for Canada and it being publicly funded? Whether or not, maybe you want the private-public partnership, that's fine too. What do you think of the idea? Isn't it about time we got into the 21st century when it comes to rail? Let me know your thoughts on the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio and Rogers TV.
We should do it as a fully public project. We should own the rail. We should own the service. We should operate it as Via Rail. We should recognize that the benefits from this project are not necessarily financial, although the project will probably pay for itself in time. The benefits are to the country, to the environment, to the people who will like to have a reliable train service connecting huge swaths of the country.
I don't know how he does it, but Devin Robertson, our guy on the other side of the glass, picks the perfect clips. I agree. I am a miser. I am as frugal as the day is long. But I think that high-speed, high-frequency rail in this country is a matter of the public good. I've wanted to see it for decades. I'm not convinced we'll ever get it, but I'm behind the idea, and I'm behind it being publicly funded. That was Justin Ling, a freelance journalist who wrote the argument in The Star recently and is pointing out exactly what you just heard in that clip. What do you think of the idea? High-speed, high-frequency rail in this country, whether it's publicly funded or not. Is it infrastructure that we need? The answer is yes from where I'm sitting, but let's find out what the answer is from where you are today. To the phones, Steve, good morning.
Good morning. So yeah, my whole family lives in England, and I got to tell you, like, going over there, the rail is essential. It is just part of your life. It makes everything so much better. And why we didn't develop it here back in the 50s, 60s, and start working from there is beyond me. I'm all for it. However, in listening to what he said there, what were some of the companies that he had named? Did I hear SNC-Lavalin, Air Canada, a couple other names thrown around there?
You did.
So I'm just going to say this. I'm going to preface this. With the current government and the 9 years of Trudeau at the head of it, I am going to say not a snowball's chance in hell would I trust this government and the companies that he listed who have done nothing but gouge people from day one anything to do with anything like that, a project like that. That is just going to balloon costs probably 4 or 5 times. And, I mean, we're already in the billions of dollars. So, no, absolutely no trust. I wouldn't believe that they would do it. And I, you know, as far as him saying a publicly funded thing, that's all fine and good. I would 100% support that. However, I think he's forgetting what country we live in. Like, can you name anything that's publicly funded in Canada that is actually beneficial to the people? I can name one or two projects, and the one of them was just pulled out from underneath the taxpayers and sold to another country. So, again, I do not trust our government. I do not trust them to implement anything this massive for the people, for the benefit of the people, by any government.
All right, Steve, I appreciate that. I understand the cynicism, and I would say it's well-placed. I hope we can get aspirational behind an idea like this, but I understand where you're coming from for sure. Mike, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. Like the Highway 7 and like the this high-speed rail studies and everything else we do, I think this should be a drinking game, and we should have a belt each time they announce this. I lived in Chicago and Europe for a while, and the federal governments over there fund this, right? The transits and stuff like that. And, you know, I'd like to even see some improvements with the current rail system. Like, how about we stop at Toronto Airport and from London, so people from London, Kitchener-Waterloo, Georgetown can stop at the Toronto Airport either by GO train or by VIA to connect. When I lived in Europe, I went to visit my cousins that lived in Freiburg, and I took the train all the time from Frankfurt. It was very, very convenient. And I believe we need this. And my suggestion would be, since the region of Waterloo is capable of implementing an LRT, that we put those planners in charge of this, because in Toronto, they couldn't even implement their LRT. So let's put the region of Waterloo know-how in place to get this done.
All right, Mike. Listen, I'm not going to argue with you there. It's a good point. Where is that Eglinton Crosstown, as it's called in Toronto? We got at least we got phase one done here in the region. I'm not so sure about phase two, but I like your faith in the planners that got it done here. Kyle, good morning. What do you think about high-speed, high-frequency rail for Canada?
Well, I used to take the train as frequent as almost every twice a month, or I should say every 2 months, to go visit my grandmother in Montreal. So I love Via Rail. I love the service when you can get a really good deal. It's cost effective, but that's the thing. Is the guy goes, and that's what worries me, is what's the price going to be for this high-speed rail? Is it going to be the same price as a ticket to be on an airplane to go between Toronto and Montreal, or is it going to be just as expensive as the other types of transportation? Because that's what I look at. sometimes I go on Via Rail and I can get a really good deal, you know, to go for less than what it cost me on gas to go to Montreal. So if I take that high-speed rail, is that going to help me cut costs, or now am I going to double the cost to go that place? So I think it's a good idea if we stay public, but look what happened to 407. It went private, and now we're trying to buy it back. So that's my two cents on it. Mike, thanks.
All right, Kyle, appreciate that. I understand your point on the cost. It's pretty expensive to ride Via Rail. If you get those deals, that's great. My problem with it now, though, even over and above that, is how long it takes you to get from here to Montreal on a train. Should not take that long, and I would pay a premium price for faster service. We'll take more calls right after this quick timeout. It's the Mike Farwell Show on 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. We seem to unanimously like the idea of high-speed, high-frequency rail in Canada, but we're rather skeptical of our nation's ability to get the job done. Let's find out how Paul feels about this. Paul on the phone with us. Good morning, Paul.
Morning. How you doing?
Good, thanks.
Listen, the people watch The Simpsons to get the ideas for these programs.
I've never watched The Simpsons once in my life. No, that's not true. Once or twice I have, but I've not watched it regularly.
You're not familiar with the Springfield Monorail.
Monorail. I've heard about it, yeah.
Yeah, that goes from no place to no place. How many times a week would you use a high-speed rail to get from this area to Montreal?
Zero. Times a week? Like, I might use it once or twice a year.
Once or twice a year, and we're going to spend that kind of money?
Yeah, but Paul, hang on. Like, basically, one quarter of the entire country's population is along this Windsor to Quebec City corridor here. Like, okay, we've got 10 million people.
You've got two choices. You have nonstop high speed from one end to the other.
Yeah.
Or every time it makes a stop, there's another 15, 20, half an hour added on to that trip.
Well, that's why they make it high speed. High frequency. They wouldn't be a milk run. That's the idea of it.
Take the GO train from Aldershot into Toronto, and it's 2 hours.
Right, but that's why
it stops at every little station.
But Paul, that's what I'm saying. That's why they make this. The deal would be it's a 3 hour trip from Toronto to Montreal, for example.
Okay, so it's nonstop. So it doesn't service anybody other than those in the Toronto area and those in the Montreal area.
Well, no, there would be maybe one or two in between. Peterborough was brought up. I don't know what exactly it's going to look like.
Every time it stops, that's going to add an hour onto that trip.
I understand.
So how can you say, and nobody is going to use it, it's going to be a white elephant.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm sorry I cut you. I'm right up against news time. I get it. Like, we will register your lack of faith in the idea. I love it. You're passionate. It might be. Maybe I'm just a dreamer. Maybe I'm just a dreamer and too much of an optimist in this case. We're going to get you to the 570 News Center for an update. And then 20 years of brewing craft beers for you. That story coming up on the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. Anytime I think that things are pretty difficult in the radio business these days, I have guests like my next guests who have made their way into the studio and have some of my absolute favorite treats in front of them. And I'm not even talking about butter tarts or cookies this time. I'm talking about some of the finest craft beer that Ontario has to offer. Really pleased to be joined in studio by John Romano, who is one of the founders of Nickelbrook Brewing. John, thanks very much for being here. Good morning.
Thank you for having us.
And Orest Pawlik is here as well, who is an area rep for Nickelbrook. You're based out of Guelph?
I'm in Guelph.
You're in Guelph.
I service this whole area
from the forest,
the
we call him.
Orest from the forest.
Walk into any LCBO and say that, and they'll know who you're talking about.
All right, I'm going to remember that, because I was just in the LCBO the other day. So Orest from the forest, will I get...
He sent me.
I was going to say, now if I say that...
Yep.
What's the price going to look like?
The same.
Okay.
Government run.
Yeah, that's true.
But these no price on these.
No price on these these delicious beverages
that are in the studio.
So there's, I see a root beer and a ginger beer.
Yeah,
there,
so Nickel Brook's named after my kids, Nick and Brooke. And Nick was 7 years old when, you know, he would jump out of bed and want to come to work with me. So he was, I hate to say this, hope nobody, no government officials are on the air right now, but he'd come rushing to work with me, and I taught him how to brew beer at the age of seven. And I thought it'd be a cool thing to make sodas because the kids were seven and five, and my daughter was a big fan of root beer. So I didn't know this at the time, but root beer was never a pop. It was a tea. It was called root tea. Dr. Heyers created it in 1867. It became a pop today, but we still make it as a tea, ferment it, package it. It's very, very good. It's rated one of the best root beers in the country.
We're here to talk about the 20th anniversary of Nickel Brook. So if they were seven and five at the time, are they in the business with you today?
So Nick became an accountant.
Okay.
So he looks after some of our finance stuff. And my daughter became a behavioral therapist, so she assesses me all the time.
Father?
Seriously, father? And like, she's quite the gal, yeah.
How did it all start for you, John?
So I was in study engineering. I was in the aerospace industry, and I grew up, you know, home brewing with dad. We were making, my brother and I were making wine as little, you know, kids, and we grew up in the country on a farm, and dad was a carpenter, but, you know, farmer by weekend and night, so we were very farm-to-table, and loved making wine with dad. And then as my brother and I became teenagers, we started drinking beer, so we started home brewing. And then back in the 90s, all the homebrew stores were opening up to brew on premises, so I started a company called Better Bitters Brewing Company, Burlington at the time, and Burlington was very British. And so we taught you how to make beer and wine and sold supplies and did it on premise. We became the largest brew on premise in Ontario, second in Canada. So I wanted to build a brewery to be able to supply myself wort. Wort is the base. It's like your grape juice to make wine, grape juice. So I built the brewery to make wort. In the middle of building the brewery, Lakeport launched their 24 for 24 buck a beer. Well, not only did it create havoc within, you know, the big breweries, competition, where on earth would you see beer going from, you know, $36, $38 a case to 24? So people that were making their own beer, I hate to say it, were cheap, and they stopped doing it. So all of a sudden, half my business or more was gone. My brother had joined me then at that point. So we were pretty well respected and known in the community. So we thought, how hard could it be to sell beer to our buddies? Burlington has some of the best draft accounts in the province of Ontario. We have the busiest sport bars down on the lakefront. There's a couple of roadhouses that do, you know, huge amounts of volume. So I thought, okay, I'm buddies with all these boys. I've golfed with them, tailgate parties at Buffalo Bill games and stuff, and golf tournaments. And I thought, I'm in, no problem. We start making beer, get my license, and call all my buddies. Ain't gonna happen. The big guys are very powerful, and they do a lot of stuff to prevent people like us to get into these places. So we, you know, kept working hard and finally picked a couple of brands over and above. Like, hate to say it, you know, making lagers and simple ales that your friends will drink is not what the LCBO is looking for someone like us. And hate to say, you know, your friends would come in and go, what, yeah, I want a case of your lager. You're going to charge me? We're such good friends. You know, so you start focusing, you know, so what got us here and you know, outside of the box is being innovative and creative. Like Nickel Brook launched the first Ontario-made gluten-free beer. We launched the first Ontario fruit beer. We launched one of the first sour beers in Ontario. We started a barrel program where we started aging beers in bourbon barrels. So we were doing very innovative things outside of the box. There's small volume styles of beer, but we're not competing with the masses now. We're carving out little niches within the beer industry or alcohol beverage, you know, consumer, and it worked. But, you know, and in the midst of all this, you know, we were the 20th brewery to open. Now there's 350, which is, you know, a little bit much. And it's a lot of hard work. And, you know, I look back at all the stuff we've done. I love what I do, but,
looking at what's happened over the past 5-10 years, if I would have made that investment in real estate, I'd be a very rich man. I love what I do, so it's like an addiction. You know, now the biggest problem we have is COVID came about, and things were pretty good because we were not having to do the shows and the trade shows and going to LCBOs and doing tastings and, you know, the coasters and the posters. And then the second year of COVID, everything we touched to make beer went up 30 to 300%. And the consumer decided they all drank too much and were all overweight. And all of a sudden, you know, marijuana and all, you know, cannabis and stuff. So a lot of changes in the industry. And now taxation, the taxes keep going up. Our costs keep going up. We have no more bottom line. So there's a big push right now to contact your MPP. If you did some research, Ontario breweries are taxed more than any breweries in the country. Like if we, like we were in losses for the past 2 years, and if I was out west, like in BC or Alberta, I would show profits because of the taxation difference. Like there's a can levy tax, an environmental can levy tax, because the government didn't want us to use cans 20, 30, 40 years ago because they felt they weren't as environmentally friendly. Well, a can melts a lot easier than it is to wash a beer bottle. So now they're friendly and they're still taxing us. So, you know, it's this constant roller coaster. But, you know, again, you love what you do. You work with people like Oris, who makes makes everything fun, and he's enjoyable to be around. And, it, you know, and it's pretty cool walking into a place and, what do you do? Oh, I own a brewery. Like, I'm in a spinning class yesterday morning. The girl, you know, was talking to me and stuff, and she's a big foodie, and she's talking about Beer Town. And I'm like, oh, we're in Beer Town. It's like, you're in Beer Town. Yeah, I own Nickelbrook. I own a brewery. Oh, my God. Like, I was like a rock star to this girl beside me in spinning class. You walk up to them and say, what do you do? I own a couple of houses. Well, that's nice, you know. It's a totally different thing. And it is a neat industry. And the people in it there's a lot of good people in the craft industry. I have to say, like a lot of our competitors, we help each other. We talk to each other. There's the big guys, and then there's us. I'm constantly helping out little breweries. I sell them cans at cost because I can get them cheaper than a small, like one-armed bandit, independent can lids. You know, we're constantly lending them vehicles and stuff. So it's a neat industry and a fun industry to be in, but it's a lot of work. I still work 20 years into it. I'm still working 6.5 days a week. And it's a grind. It's a constant grind. And now, you know, the government's put beer into convenience stores. Yeah, more points of distribution, our numbers are up, but the verdict's not out. Like, my distribution costs are going to go out the roof. A beer store calls me, they order 20, 30 cases of beer. A liquor store calls me, they order 10, 20, 30 cases of beer. A convenience store calls me, they're ordering a case of beer. They don't have the room. Right, so there's lots of things happening in our industry, but it's your anniversary.
It is your anniversary, and I want to talk about how we're celebrating 20 years at Nickelbrook right after this quick timeout. I love the spirit of collaboration, though, in the craft brew industry. It really is great. John Romano is one of the founders of Nickelbrook. Orest the Forest Pollock is the area rep for Nickelbrook, and he is the one who helped us arrange this conversation today on the Mike Farwell Show. 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. It is the 20th anniversary for Nickelbrook Brewing, the 20th craft brewer in our province. And as exactly now, John Romano, who is one of the founders of Nickelbrook, says now there's hundreds, more than 350 craft brewers in the province. John in studio with us. Orest Pollock is here as well, the area rep for Nickelbrook. I know you're waving your hand, Orest, but seriously,
I don't know where I'm waving.
You're just being dismissive of me, and that's fine. You should
I'm trying to see. Wasn't my hat good?
Your hat is perfect. Right. Your hat is perfect. Well, you were with the LCBO. How did you end up working for one of the original craft brewers in the province?
Oh, I woke up from long night drinking. No. No, actually, I just was working at the LCBO, and I worked for like 30-odd years, and 37 years, to be fact. I just retired last year. But I was always passionate about local Ontario wines, for sure. Like, when Ontario Wines started, someone had to support Ontario Wines, even though they may not have been so good. I got into it. I loved it. And then beer was a thing. We started having beer at the LCBO. Then we started getting this craft beer talk and what's all this. And I didn't like it. But then
I did start tasting more.
And then you realize how good it is.
How good it is, how different it was,
yes.
And how exciting it is. And to be fair, now our brewery, we make a whole ton of exciting new beer, but all these flavors people seem to want and crave. Not, and we were just talking before we came in, I don't want to be drinking my dad's beer. And so I just continued at the LCBO, and I became like a category manager for the beer section. I was a product consultant for 9 years, so I educated people on wine, spirits, and beer. And then when I became the assistant manager at the store I retired from, I took over the beer category and took it into like the top five in the province for sales. And just supporting small craft guys. Hey, we're a small guy. What's this like? Oh, I'll bring it in. Oh, it's this.
Or it was great. That's why he works for us.
Yeah, and then I was a promoter. Like, hey, try this. And we had other breweries come to us, and we would taste in our kitchen and get educated. And then once we had that information, we can go share.
I thought customers. I had a fun job.
Oh,
come
no,
on,
it's brutally fun. but you know, we got to be responsible. To taste it. But just when someone comes in and asks, we at the LCBO, we are trained and we can help you find the right beer. Or something new and exciting, from a Pilsner to a lager to an Oktoberfest beer to cocktails or non-alcoholic options, sours, stouts, you know.
Yeah,
quite an array. Knowledge is great to know.
Absolutely.
And we appreciate it. And then he appreciated it. And so when I retired, phone calls are made, an interview.
John, you regret it, don't you?
Some days.
A little bit.
Yeah. Man, I'm getting it here.
He was one of our biggest fans. I remember when I started the brewery, he worked at... 495, just near
Scottsdale.
And I would do store tastings there, and I have records of, you know, units sold out of the store. And then Oris would have consumer events, because they had like an event section in the center back of the store. He always invited us. He was a huge fan. I looked after the area our first year as I was on the road. I'm still on the road, but more local now. And he was a big fan, and I always enjoyed his energy. He has great energy. And loved his job and knew his job well, and, you know, made selling beer very pleasant. And I kept bugging him when I found out he was going to retire in a couple of years. I put a seed, a bug in his ear years ago. And then when he retired, I'm like, you got to come work for me. Kept bugging him, and he did. And it's been great. We have three retired LCBO employees, and we love them. They're great.
You know where to go to find them, for sure. So how, John, do you celebrate 20 years at Nickelbrook? What's that going to look like?
We've already started. We just celebrated. We had a beer fest at the brewery. We did 20 breweries, 20 years. And then we also had attached an Oktoberfest to it. And I hate to do events and stuff to that magnitude just for the sake of us. And it's, you know, it's great to give back. And we've always been a, you know, community-driven company. You know, we're a family operation. It's me and my brother and Peter, and, you know, the brewery's named after my kids and stuff. Our wives were involved for a long time. So we raised over $20,000 for that, for Children's Aid. And then we plan on doing some stuff at the brewery. So we just did a 20th anniversary beer fest and Oktoberfest, which was great. But to celebrate in retail, we're launching our number one beer is Headstock, which is a West Coast IPA.
I've enjoyed many.
We're launching a double Headstock, which everybody's like, it's about time. And the number one craft beer in Ontario ratings for many years has been our Old Kentucky, which is an Imperial Stout at 9% that's brewed and put in a bourbon barrel that is anywhere from 3 to 12 years old. We get them from Buffalo Trace and Mission Hill and Four Roses, and we aged the beer for a full year. Last year, I was not happy with the beer. I needed more time, so we did not put out Old Kentucky. So Old Kentucky is coming out shortly in a box that's been aged for about a year and a half with a 20th anniversary glass. You're going to see that in most of your LCBOs. So we're making product to celebrate it, and we'll have some stuff happening at the brewery also. So if you follow us on social media, you'll get to see a lot of that. But our anniversary beers are going to be Double Headstock and Old Kentucky, which is great because those are the two beers that put us on the map in Ontario in craft. Our first, you know, claims to fame was a gluten-free beer and our Apple Pilsner. And, you know, a lot of the big brewmasters and big brewers in the province didn't look at us too seriously because we were making those beers. But they paid the bills. There was a demand for them. They paid the bills. Like, you own a restaurant, and, you know, is it big thing if you make a great burger. It's nice if you make a great burger, but, you know, you start making some more exotic dishes and you're known for them, it's a little bit more respect within the industry. So when Headstock came out, we turned some heads, and it won some big medals and kind of, stamped, that we are a craft brewery. And then we came out with Old Kentucky, and people were, couldn't believe the quality of that product. And the respect level changed in the industry, which is great. And I still think we're a very well-respected brewery in the province, and it comes from hard work and having great staff. Well, like during COVID, the least of our problems was getting people to work. Everybody came to work, and most of them come with a smile on their face.
Well, that's because you're making things like Headstock, and you had me at Headstock. I can promise you that. I wish we had more time, but we're fresh out. Congratulations on 20 years.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much for being here. Orris Pollock and John Romano, one of the founders of Nickel Brook Brewing Company, celebrating 20 years of craft beer here in Ontario, right out of Burlington. This is the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. Not only did I end up with many a beer, some swag and some glassware from Nickel Brook Brewing Company, but they brought pens, and I love me a pen in the hand whilst in the midst of the show. I got to get you to the 570 News Center for an update, and then I will not tell a lie. I am a massive fan of our next guest, and I'm so glad he was able to come in studio and talk with us about what's coming next now that he has retired from his position at the City of Kitchener. Going back to his creative roots, Bob Egan is with us next on the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. I mentioned it before that update with Hutch. I will say it again while he sits in studio, because he gave me a hard time. The speakers in the hallway gave away my secret. Massive fan. I am a massive fan of our next guest. Our paths have crossed a couple of times through his work with the Kitchener Public Library and then the City of Kitchener, and he has just retired from the City of Kitchener as its music and interactive media officer. But I knew him long before, from his musicianship with Blue Rodeo and others, one of Canada's finest, Bob Egan, in studio. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mike. It's a tough act to follow, those folks from the brewery. I didn't bring the swag that they brought.
That's okay. You brought coffee, which is excellent and far more appropriate at this time of day for me.
Well, that's a notice to future guests.
Exactly. Let's start, Bob, with the last number of years that took you into what I would think is a very different environment from your life in music to something much more corporate slash structured through the Kitchener Public Library and the City of Kitchener. What was that chapter in your life like?
Well, the question, Mike, that people ask is, who leaves Blue Rodeo? Number one, right? I mean, the greatest job in the world. And who leaves it to become part of the bureaucracy, to become a public servant? And it goes back to a conversation I had with Emmylou Harris, country singer, in 1996 it was. We were on tour with Wilco, opening for Sheryl Crow across the country and down in the States. Emmylou came out of Nashville, and we had a nice long walk and talk along the Cumberland River where she told me her life story. But she closed by saying that she wouldn't be able to stay for the whole show because she was flying off to Oslo, Norway, to participate in the Nobel Peace Prize ceremony. And that was the year where this effort to ban landmines won the Nobel Peace Prize. And Emmylou had dedicated a couple years of her career to spreading the word about this movement and got Willie Nelson involved, Neil Young involved, all types of people, raised the profile. And I was so struck by that. That night after the show, we're in the, I'm lying in my bunk in the tour bus. We're heading off to, I think, Louisville, Kentucky. And I could not sleep. I was just so inspired by this. And I made a vow. I'll never forget it. I said, if I ever get any measure of success or notoriety or fame, I will follow in the example of Emmylou Harris and give back to the community to try to make it a little better place. And in 2017, I left Blue Rodeo to fulfill that vow. It was my time to do that.
And so that vow came through public service to this community, which you have called home for a number of years now.
Yeah, for 20 years now, which is crazy.
It really is.
Yeah.
How does it feel to be exiting that chapter, retiring from that role and that service?
Very bittersweet. I mean, it's no exaggeration to say that I felt very honored to be in these roles. I mean, to have, I guess, the notoriety and a few basic skills to be able to contribute, right? That's, I don't think you can ask for more out of life than that. And so I was blessed in a, you know, in a non-spiritual way, just with the opportunity to do the work that I did at Kitchener Public Library, you know, raise money and bring the Hefner Studio to life, these four recording studios that anybody in the community can use for free, and the Sun Life Instrument Lending Library there, 250 instruments that you can check out for free, just like a book, right? So I'm very proud of that legacy, and then the work I did at the city was something I'll truly miss. I really will.
How much, while you were doing that other work and fulfilling that public service, did you miss what you had been doing prior?
I didn't allow myself to miss anything. I don't believe in regrets. I don't believe in looking back. I just believe in being in the moment and saying, this is amazing, what I've got every day on my plate. So people ask me that all the time. Do you miss it? And, you know, to be honest with you, the first couple of years when I would walk from my house to Kitchener Public Library, I would go, I could go past Center in the Square, and I would see the tour buses there. And that was my home for 22 years. And the first couple of years, I got this instant pang of, oh my goodness, that'd be great. 2 seconds later, followed by, whew, I'm glad I'm not on that tour bus anymore.
Yeah. And I mean, being on that tour bus and living that life, as much as I'm sure there were highlights, the conversation with Emmylou Harris just being one of them, but there has to be a sense of it too, where when you can put your feet down and have roots in the same place for an extended period of time, that really matters.
Yes. I'd been a bit of a rambler my whole life. My family moved a lot, right? I went to four different grade schools by the sixth grade. So I learned how to call every place I lived home. And I felt I had an obligation to make this home, to be a fan of this home. You know, it's, if you're going to live in a place, you better be the biggest champion of it or move. And so I'd moved a lot. I mean, the longest I've ever lived anywhere has been in Kitchener. And it felt good. It felt good, especially during the summer, when the Blue Rodeo schedule is we would fly out on a Thursday or a Friday almost every weekend of the summer and fly back on a Sunday night or a Monday. And, you know, the first couple of weekends when I'm not flying out was like, I didn't know what to do, right? To have weekends during the summer was amazing. I mean, all within the context of Blue Rodeo is, you know, next to my family, the greatest honor and joy of my life.
Without question. And one of the greatest honors and joys of ours to be able to have that catalog of music to enjoy. And we'll talk more about it. Bob Egan in studio with us this morning. I also want to know what comes next, because I get the sense that this guy isn't done doing creative things for sure. We'll continue the conversation here on the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio and Rogers TV.
Bob Egan is in studio with us this morning. For the better part of a decade, he's been fulfilling his commitment to his community as a public servant. But he has recently retired as the music and interactive media officer, the city of Kitchener. And I know the final chapter is not even close to written. You just said something during that break, Bob, that I would like to, if I can, expand on. You were talking about being the very definition of starving artist when Blue Rodeo rescued you from it. How did the relationship with Blue Rodeo begin?
Do you have a half an hour, Mike?
I've got as much time as you would like.
I was on tour with Wilco. This is back in the late 90s. And we played a couple shows at the Horseshoe Tavern in Toronto, legendary venue. And, you know, people talk about it to this day. We had our own opening act with us, but Jeff and Craig at the Horseshoe threw on this new folk singer to town who just moved to town from Vancouver. Hadn't released a record. She was just starting out. Oh, Susanna, or Susie Ungerleiter is her name. And, you know, she being an opening band for Wilco in a tavern is not a job many people want, right? Because nobody cares. Being the opener for the opening band is even worse, right? But Susie came up and she did a handful of songs. And something, you know, her voice, the beauty of her voice was just apparent even in this setting. So I went to her dressing room, which was downstairs of the Horseshoe. It's where they store all the beer bottles before they get shipped out, right? Very glamorous and glorious. And I told her, I love your voice. If there's anything I can ever do to help you, let me know. So we exchanged numbers. 2 years later, a year and a half later, I'm out of Wilco. I'm living in Mississippi. I am literally starving, making $9,000 to $10,000 a year to live on, launching my solo career, and just about ready to give up. It was brutal. And she got a hold of me from Toronto and said, hey, I want you to play on my record. There's not a lot of money. In fact, there's no money, but you can sleep on my floor and I'll feed you and, you know, get you a little bit of money. We'll go play some college gigs. So I said, yeah, anything. Came up to Toronto, walked in the studio, and the first person I met was Basil Donovan, the bass player from Blue Rodeo, who is legendary for helping out young folk singers, right? He really gives back. And Baz and I got to know each other. And in fact, he came to Norway with me to do a little tour. And we really got to know each other there. It was one of the best tours of my life. And when we got back, I don't know, it was maybe 6 months later, when Blue Rodeo was looking for a new steel player. And there's a lot of good steel players in Canada, a lot of good steel players right in Toronto. But Basil, I believe, said, well, what about this Egan guy that used to be in Wilco? And the ears perked up, and he said, he's a good guy. He's a guy you can spend time on a bus with, right? So that's a very important thing to join any band. Musicianship is one thing, but can you spend 3 months in a row in a bus with a guy? A big, big factor. And Basil said, yeah, I believe you can. So they called me up, and I've been here ever since, late 99.
Incredible.
But so it happened because I was just a nice guy. I went and paid a compliment to Oh, Susanna, right? And so all you kids out there looking to become rock stars, I encourage you to use the power of being nice to people. It'll open doors.
Kindness costs you nothing. I've said it often. Where do you go now? I'm sure you're not done doing all manner of things, but now that you're out of the bureaucracy, as you referred to it before, you fulfilled this public service. I'm sure there is a creative side of you that is still percolating at minimum. What's next?
Well, I have to say before that, I do have to give a shout out to the ECDEV at City of Kitchener, right? Like, before I joined the city, I had this stereotype of what it was like, right? I thought, number one, there was a big room with a lot of money in it.
Those are my tax dollars, Bob.
Yes, yeah. I couldn't find the room, right? And secondly, I thought that, oh, city employees, right? They're just, you know, punching the clock, right? But when I got there, I was stunned by the passion that these people have, that they're not there, believe me, to for the glory or the fame or to get rich. They are there to make this a better place to live. And like, I'm not on retainer, so I don't know the ceiling or anything. I'm just saying this because it's true. I was stunned by the passion that they have for making this a better place. And it was truly an honor to work there and be part of these teams, right, to make this a better community. So it was very bittersweet to leave. But what had been happening is the need to create, which I did not have when I left Blue Rodeo, but came back a few years later, just got larger and larger and larger. And the need to be an entrepreneur again. I've been self-employed most of my life. Got larger and larger and larger. So I've laid the groundwork for a public speaking career. And I am excited out of my mind because it checks all the boxes. It's the creativity involved in branding yourself and marketing yourself, the creativity involved in building the perfect keynote for a client just keeps me up at night with excitement, believe it or not.
I do believe that.
Yeah.
I do believe that because whether it's music, whether it's spoken word, that creative part of you never goes away.
It took a little bit of vacation,
sure.
But yes, it's back, you know, with a full vengeance now. And things are looking great. I've got 4 speeches booked for November. And so I'm so looking forward to making these connections and networking and really kind of bootstrapping from the ground up. That brings me great joy to build. I'm a builder, not a manager, right? So I get to build this new career at this point in my life, right? I've had a few good chapters. to have another chapter like this ahead of me is just a joy.
It's incredible to get your time in the studio today. As I said at the outset, I'm a longtime fan, and I'm so glad that you could make time for us. Best of luck in this next chapter, and I hope we can connect and talk again.
Thank you very much, Mike, and thanks for the service that you provide to our community.
It's an absolute pleasure. Bob Egan of Blue Rodeo, and now embarking on the next chapter, joining us in studio here this morning on the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. Well, who's having a better day than we are? We talked about beer, and there is still a little bit of it left in the studio. Sorry that we can't share it at this very moment, but celebrating 20 years at Nickel Brook Brewing Company, we just had a conversation and got to listen to some of the stories from Bob Egan. Yes, that Bob Egan of Canadian rock royalty Blue Rodeo, who is embarking on the next chapter of his career. He's had many an interesting chapter to date, and having just retired from the city of Kitchener and his role there, Bob will be embarking on an entrepreneurial pursuit as a public speaker, and I'm sure there are many more stories to come. Great to catch up with Mr. Egan and have a conversation about what is coming next and what has already transpired, just scratching the surface of all of those stories from his life in music, but the creative juices, they tend to continue flowing. Hope yours are too, because remember, every day from noon until 1, we have open phone lines so we can hear from you on the 12 o'clock talkback hour. Taking your calls, you can start the conversation. We're here to listen. And coming up right after this update from the 570 News Center, I think we know by now. I mean, I'm still trying to get used to when we change the clocks and, quite frankly, why we change the clocks. However, this weekend upcoming is the weekend during which we fall back. We will change our clocks again. And for as long as I can remember, along with falling back and changing those clocks, when we spring forward, we're encouraged to do it as well. Check those batteries in your smoke alarm, right? Well, along with checking those batteries, when we change our clocks, we should also check our plumbing. We'll tell you why it's important and how easy it is to do coming up on the Mike Farwell Show. This is 570 News Radio and Rogers TV.
Just a reminder that this weekend coming is the weekend during which you fall back. Move those clocks back 1 hour. Don't even get me started on the why, because I think it's an antiquated practice that we continue to engage in twice annually. But it does offer us a little mark on the calendar, which can remind us to do things like change the batteries in our smoke detectors and perhaps even check our plumbing. Barb Robinson is the president at Norton Engineering in Kitchener and joins us in studio. Always nice to see you. Good morning.
Great day to see you, Mike, as always. Yep, beautiful day out there.
It is indeed. Why should we be checking our plumbing at the same time we change our clocks?
The reason is very simple. So if you own a house, you own a sewer and you own a water main. So that's the pipe that goes from the wall of your house out to the street. So talking about sewers, we call that the lateral sewer, and it's lateral to the mainline sewer. And that pipe is never maintained unless you maintain it. And, you know, cities maintain their sewer pipes, the main pipes on the street. They camera them minimum once every 5 years and sometimes more frequently than that because it's buried underground. It's very deep. You have no idea what condition it's in. The only way to find out the condition is to camera those sewers, and the cities do that. I'm saying we need to now start sharing with residents that they also own a sewer and that sewer should also be camered. Why? Because having a sewer in poor conditions substantially increases your risk of basement flood. We always want to keep those risks down. So I've been messaging for years that spring and fall when cities are doing public service messaging about fire, which is a life safety issue. Look, flood is not a life safety issue, but flooding affects way more people than your whole house burning down. And flooding causes PTSD. Basement floods cause PTSD. And this information is available. We just need to be sharing it with residents. And Mike, one of the reasons I do this stuff, so I'm a civil engineer. I've worked on the municipal side, but I sort of started studying the building codes and became fluent in the building codes as they relate to plumbing. So that's how I know kind of both sides of the property line. In cities, you only have municipal engineers, so their knowledge stops at the property line. Pardon me. Engineers' knowledge stops at the property line, and then the building department looks after the private side. So there's poor translation between those two groups, but that's okay. Here we are today. I'm going to help residents understand your plumbing and understand what would be good to do, again, twice a year to protect your family and save. The average basement flood cost is $60,000, PTSD and insurance problems, whatever. So you really want to do this.
I'll tell you what, we have gone through the really unfortunate experience of a basement flood. And you're not kidding about that PTSD. We still talk about that night back in January of whatever year it was. I remember vividly I was on the road with the Rangers in Barrie. I get a message from my beloved that the basement's flooding, and we spent the whole night taking turns with the shop vac,
yep,
sucking up the water. Anyway, we'll never forget it. Sump pump's in place now. It's been a lifesaver, a basement saver for us.
I think I've seen your basement, Mike.
I think you have.
I checked his plumbing one time.
So what is required of us then as homeowners to check our sewer?
Yeah. So this is basically Norton's public messaging for residents. These are the things I want you to think about and do every spring and fall. Firstly, number one thing is you need to find out where your sewer cleanout is. The cleanout is basically a box on top of the sewer. It's level with your basement floor, and it's at the front wall of your house. And that's the access point to access your private sewer between the street and your house. You always want to know where that cleanout is because you really should be checking that twice a year. You want to make sure that cleanout cap, so it's just an access way to the pipe, and it has a cap, a threaded cap on it. That cleanout cap must be closed at all times. And I'm going to talk about rats in a minute, but that's one of the reasons.
Oh, why do you got to do that? I had to remember that from being a kid.
I know, but people are getting rats in their houses, and they're getting in through poor plumbing, and we're not telling them this. If you have a broken lateral, a crappy sewer that's got holes in it, and your cleanout, if you got the cleanout cap off, maybe to drain your sump water, which a lot of people do, it's illegal, you are putting yourself at risk of sewer gases in your house, vermin entry, including rats. That's how rats get around. They go through sewers. So you really want to make sure that stuff is covered. So having located your cleanout, do not put carpet over it. Do not put anything over it. You need it to be available because if you need to get that cleanout open for in an emergency situation, you want to know where it is. Now you've located the cleanout. Number one, first order of business for everybody today, and I want you to call your plumber this afternoon. If you have never had your private sewer lateral, your private sewer camera inspected by a plumber, you need to do that right away. And I don't care if your house is 2 years old or 50 years old. A lot of those sewers are in poor condition. We haven't been installing them as well in the last 20 years. We haven't been as careful, and I've talked about that many, many times before, Mike. And if your sewer is 80 years old, like mine was, I had a basement backup as well, it's probably full of roots or whatever. It could be broken down. So a plumber for $300 will come into your house, launch a CCTV lateral camera through the clean out. And by the way, if you don't have a clean out, the plumber can install one for you, so you're covered there. And that's a camera inside the pipe, so you'll be able to see exactly what condition the pipe is in. Are there leaks at the joints? Is it a metal pipe corroding? Is it falling apart? Some of these pipes in the ground, the older sewers, were just two pieces of clay pipe, just butt-ended together, like not attached in any way. And that's what my sewer was like. So when I had mine camered, eventually, because I was getting slow drains, there was a mat of roots at every joint, which is very common. The mat was so thick that if I had been anybody else and hadn't been using my sewer so very carefully over the years, not flushing any garbage, it would have backed up way before then. So you need that baseline camera inspection. And by the way, I recommend you ask for a CD of the inspection. Hang on to it in your insurance file, because if there's a flood later on or whatever, you'll have proof that you were maintaining your sewer lateral. I'm actually working with the insurance people to see about having a discount on your insurance if you do that proactive maintenance, because that reduces flood costs.
But that's our responsibility as the homeowner.
You own the sewer, but no one tells anybody.
Exactly.
You own a sewer and you own a water main. Yes. And the cities camera their sewers every year. So it's the same kind of sewer pipe, same specification. Well, it's not exactly the same, but it's a sewer pipe. So yeah, it's just that residents don't know. So don't feel badly if you didn't know this. Trust me, nobody knows all this stuff. And I was going to say at the beginning, if you don't know, you can listen to Mike's show later on in the afternoon, because I'm going to give you a lot of information. So number one order of business, camera that lateral.
Okay.
All right. Number two, if you have a backwater valve, they're not very common in the region, so I won't spend too much time on those.
You have a backwater valve.
I have a backwater valve. I had a backwater valve installation party and Norton anniversary party at 5 years. So I had a backwater guy come and install the backwater valve, and everybody came and watched. All the engineers came and plumbers, because they're not that common around here. So we all learned a lot. So I have one. Here's the thing with the backwater valve. It only works, so it has a flap that if the hydraulic grade line, the water level in the sewer gets high enough, it will slam shut. So it seals itself with a rubber gasket or whatever. If that's not squeaky clean, like if there's junk on that rubber gasket, it won't seal. And because it's water, it will fail. So I know in Hamilton, they had a funding program where they funded, I forget how many, say 10 or 20,000 houses to put backwater valves in. There was a big rainstorm and 40% of them failed because they weren't cleaned or they were put in backwards by home plumbers. Like if you're doing your own home plumbing, guys, you got to make sure you get this stuff in correctly. There's arrows on the backwater valve. So now if it fails, the flooding is not going to be any worse than it would have been if you didn't have the backwater valve. But it cost me like $7,000 to retrofit a backwater valve into my basement because I have an older home. So so if you have a backwater valve, you need to clean it. Check your instructions. I would need to clean my backwater valve easily every 3 months, because never mind that I don't flush any trash, flushable wipes, tampons, none of that stuff. I don't flush any of that stuff, but just the regular stuff gets hung up in there. Okay. Next thing, and this is not a maintenance thing for spring and fall, but this is something you need to know. And I brought up rats. We've seen more rats in Uptown Waterloo. There was a rat problem in Ottawa recently. Rats are a problem in cities. Rats live in sewers. Sewers are highways for rats. That's where rats live. Well, they live other places too. So they travel around in the sewers, particularly your private sewer, because if you think about it, your private sewer lateral is empty unless you're flushing a toilet or taking a shower. It should be empty. Well, unless it's leaking, and that's another problem. Rats can walk up that empty pipe and swim through your basement toilet trap. Swim through your basement toilet trap and get into your house that way. It's not uncommon. I've had a lot of people tell me that's happened to them. Solution is easy. Keep the lid down on your toilet. Keep the lid down on your toilet. But so the other thing I really need to talk about, when I talk about keeping your sewer lateral in good condition, when you make sure your sewer lateral is in good condition, clean water is not leaking into that sewer lateral, because clean water leaking into your sewer lateral at your house gets into the city system, the city pipes, and down to the city sewage treatment plant, and everyone pays for it. So keeping that lateral in good condition is best for everybody. So cities really should be messaging that. Anyway, so I'm kicking it off, but pick it up, cities, let's go.
You're helping out the cities in this regard. Barbara Robinson is with us in studio, the president of Norton Engineering. Change your clocks,
check your plumbing. We'll give you these easy tips to just try to guard against basement flooding and, heaven forbid, vermin. Stay with us on the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. Barbara Robinson joins us in studio this morning. She is the president of Norton Engineering, and she's doing our municipalities a solid here today, providing the public service messaging that, hey, clocks are changing this weekend. Maybe you want to check your plumbing. Find that sewer clean out in your basement. Have it. Have a camera sent down it by your plumber. Do that at least once every 5 years. Clean your backwater valve if you have one. You don't want it to fail. Keep that toilet lid down in the basement because that could be an entryway for rats. And we don't want vermin. And I was telling Barbara during the commercial break, I remember that happening in our house as a kid. It still has scarred me. So what else can we be doing that we can improve our chances of avoiding flooding and certainly avoiding that nasty vermin?
Yeah, one easy one and then two harder ones. Another thing to mention is that your floor drains in your basement. So every fixture in your house, every sink, toilet, whatever, has a trap. It's called a P-trap. The purpose of the P-trap is to provide a water seal between the gases in the sewer and your house. If you didn't have that P-trap with the water sitting in it, the sewer gases would come up through all your fixtures. They would come up through the drains or whatever. So now in your basement, you have floor drains, which also have P-traps in them. But if they never get water in them, the water in the P-trap evaporates and the P-trap can be empty. So if you ever go in your basement smelling a little skunky, a little off or whatever, grab a milk jug and fill P-traps with a cup of water. In fact, you should do that once a year. Right? Just go down and fill up your P-trap. You can't tell if there's water in there. Just put water in your P-trap. Cut out the smells. Good job. Rats cannot get up through your P-trap, so don't worry about that.
Okay, good.
Next. All right. If you have a sump pump, and if your house was built after 1988, that's a third of all homes, so that would be in the province and in Czech here specifically, you probably were given, were provided with a sump pump to pump the foundation drain water, which weeping tile water, away from the wall of your house, either to surface or sometimes to a storm lateral or whatever, usually to surface. You need to make sure that sump pump is operational. So there's two ways this could go here. If you have a sump pump and it never operates, how do you know it's operational? If you never hear it go off and you need it, how do you know the seals haven't seized? It's a mechanical piece of equipment. You can't just leave it there for 20 years and expect it to function. So if it never runs, you need to check it. And if it runs all the time, that means you depend on it. So if you have a sump pump in your house that's running all the time, I suggest you speak to a plumber about a backup sump pump, backup power, whatever, because you can back these things up to make sure they're functional when you need them. So talk to a plumber about that. Backwater valve. Sorry. I just had a brain fart. How to check the sump pump. Sorry, Mike. Again, grab a jug of water, a big jug of water, and fill the sump with the water. The float should rise, and when it gets to the tipping point at the top, the pump should cycle on. Sump pumps only last 10 years. So if you had one kicking around your basement for 30 years, I'd look at your operations manual or whatever, but you need a new sump pump. So that's your sump pump. Last thing, and this is talking about stormwater more than sewage, but I am going to mention it because it's very important. We want those roof leaders disconnected from your from the sanitary sewer. If your house is older than 1988, you probably had roof leaders were legally connected to the sanitary sewer. It's illegal today per all sewer use bylaws. You were talking this morning about bylaw officers doing these nuisance complaints. We could be checking whether people's roof leaders, downspouts, are connected to the sanitary sewer because that costs all residents many thousands of dollars every year. Every connected roof in Kitchener costs every other resident $2,000 per year to treat. We could get all those $2,000 per year off our sewer bills if the cities would just implement mandatory roof leader downspout disconnection. So that's something else. You want the elbow, so the downspout comes down the wall of your house, you put an elbow on, and you need a long extension. You don't want that water getting back towards the foundation wall of your house because it'll go down the wall and get into your foundation drains, weeping tiles. Okay?
So not everybody is Bob Vila. I know I'm dating myself by using that reference to the home renovation repair guy, but can any homeowner do this? Are we going to have to? I mean, you already talked about getting the plumber in. It's a $300 bill
yep.
to get the camera into the lateral.
Yeah.
But
Nope. Anybody can do the roof leader downspout disconnection is easy peasy lemon squeezy. Go to the hardware store. Well, look at your setup first. You want to see where you want to discharge that water. Please discharge that water onto the grass, not your driveway. We want that water to soak back into the groundwater. Here we are in region of Waterloo. Groundwater is a precious resource here, and we need it for drinking water. Why are we allowing all that flow to get dumped into the Grand River instead of letting it land in place where it lands? So I don't want it on the driveway. We want it on the grass. That's low impact. That's recharging groundwater, which is especially important here. Let's flip to water before we run out of time.
Okay.
So same thing. You own a water pipe. You are the proud owner of a water pipe. It's the pipe from the city property line, which, by the way, if you ever wonder where your property line is, it's where the water valve is. The water valve is installed at property line so the city can shut off. So if you want to know what your property is and what the city is, it's at the location of the water valve. You have a main water shutoff valve in your house. It's going to be down in your basement on the front wall. It's probably right near your sewer clean out. If you have a cold room, it might be in there, or a furnace room. That valve is your main security to shut the water off in your house. So it, again, it's a mechanical valve. It needs to be exercised. Cities exercise the valves every year in the system. Crews go out to all the intersections. Oh, I don't know if they do every valve every year, but and they exercise the valves. They just go out and turn the valves on and off a bunch of times to make sure they're operational. So in an emergency, when they have to come and shut down the water, they know that those valves operate. Same at your house. So just turn that valve. Don't turn it quickly. I want you to slowly turn the water valve on and off. In fact, that's true of all your fixtures. Do you ever hear a sound in your house? If you turn the water on quickly, you kind of hear a banging sound?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. That is water hammer. That is because you're changing the pressure in the water system too quickly, and that's a wave of pressure that runs back and forth through your water mains. It's not good for your water mains. If you can, remember, turn your water on more slowly and you won't hear that bang.
I like to get the full force. I like Niagara Falls, Barb.
Do you like water main leaks in your house?
No, I don't like water main leaks.
How's your main water shut off? Is it working, or is it going to fail on you?
You got to be such a nerd about these things,
don't
you?
Well, I am such a nerd, so there. All right, a couple more things.
Okay, we got 90 seconds.
Okay, emergency water supply. We've been talking about it for years. You must have emergency water supply at your house. Go to the water store. You buy a couple of those big jugs. You throw them in, or however big your family is, throw them in a basement. Because if what happens in Calgary happens here, and Mike, we're going to see that kind of thing more often because our infrastructure is past its useful life in some cases. We're going to see more of this. If Calgary happened here, you'd have drinking water at home. You'd be fine. So it's not a big cost. Everybody should be doing that, and municipalities should be reminding people to do that. Okay, last thing. To protect the city system using your private water, remember, we're directly connected to the city system. This is going to be really nerdy, but I love it. You need to maintain an air break between the water system and the sewer system. The only thing separating your water system and your sewer system is the foot of air in each of your sinks. Otherwise, they'd be directly connected. So you never want a running faucet, running water hose. Don't leave a running hose in a bucket. Don't leave a running hose in a laundry tub. In a water main break situation, sudden loss of pressure, the pressures reverse in the water mains, they can go negative, and it sucks the water out of everybody's house into the public water system. If you have a dish of, you know, soapy water or grease or whatever, and a running hose in a bucket with that water, that can get sucked back into the city water system. No, never the twain shall meet. Don't leave running hoses in buckets or water that's connected to the city.
All right. We got all the information we need. Don't forget to change your clocks, too, by the way.
Well, who cares about clocks?
Barbara Robinson is the president of Norton Engineering. She's with us on the Mike Farwell Show. 570 News Radio and Rogers TV. Well, time flies when you're either having fun or you're full of information. I think we've accomplished both of those things so far today on the program. And the program is not yet over. As you know, the next hour belongs to you. It is our 12 o'clock talkback hour, where whatever idea you have or whatever response to a subject we discussed today that you would like to give, you pick up the phone, you make the call and start the conversation, and we'll see where things go. In our open line hour called the 12 o'clock talkback hour. That will follow this update from the 570 News Center. Thanks to our friends at Rogers TV Cable 20, the staff and volunteers who put together the 2 hours of TV for this show every day from 10 until noon. Their time is up for the day, but we continue on the radio side with your 12 o'clock talkback hour coming up on the Mike Farwell Show. 570 News Radio and so long, Rogers TV.
Take out the papers and the trash, or you don't get no spending cash.
cold bed.
Just finish cleaning up your room. Let's see that dust fly with that broom. Get all that garbage out of sight. Or you don't go out Friday night. Yaggedy-yack.
Don't cold bed.
Contrary to what the song says, I would very much like it if you did talk back. Give us a call here for the next 60 minutes and let us know what's on your mind. Something that we talked about during the show today that you want to reflect on, you've got thoughts on, we're happy to hear them, or anything else that's on your mind. Maybe it's happening in your neighborhood, maybe it's happening province-wide, maybe it's happening in the country, and you've got to get it off your chest. Maybe it's even what's happening in the United States. Oh boy, are we headed towards a big day next Tuesday, aren't we, with that U.S. presidential election. The numbers are as follows. 519-570-2545, star 570, and 1-800-570-5715. We will get right to the phones. Jersey Bill, good afternoon.
Yeah, you know, I think the remaining few undecided voters are going to break toward Harris. I can see her hopefully getting a majority of the vote. But you know, that's not why I called. I called last night because after listening to you be elated about last night's Kitchener Rangers result, I did check out that I was looking at the. At the World Series simultaneously. My dad was an old Yankees fan, and I'm sure he would have been happy with yesterday's outcome. And, you know, a grand slam by somebody from Watchung, New Jersey. Watchung is the first ridge of the Appalachian Mountains, and it's so that town is named after it, and it's situated just there, just north of Plainfield, where I came from, and where I come from. And that was amazing what Mr. Volpe did, and... the whole thing was sort of interesting, and now puts the once one team wins one, 3-1, you can't really, if the team dominates you for all four games, not much you can do about that. But 3-1 is just as good as anything else. They've got a chance to make it 3-2 tonight, and we'll see where it goes from there.
All right, Billy, appreciate the call. I love baseball because it is timeless. The game is not over until you have recorded 27 outs. It's that simple. There's no clock on it. You are alive as long as that 27th out has not been recorded. Having said that, I'm not really a Yankees fan. I'm not really a Dodgers fan. I'm a baseball fan. I like to watch the game well played. I cheer for the home/local team, the Toronto Blue Jays. That's all we've got here in Canada. But the game itself, I love. And Billy did call last night during our Rangers talk post-game show, and I'm just looking at the standings in the Ontario Hockey League today, and what team is it that I see at number one in the overall standings in the Ontario Hockey League? That would be your Kitchener Rangers. I have no illusions about this remaining the way that it is, but 14 games in, go figure, the Kitchener Rangers are number one in the league. I love looking at it. I'm super proud of the team. I think they're playing fantastic hockey so far this year. And we just went through an entire month of October, and the Kitchener Rangers did not lose a game in regulation. Back to the phones, continuing your talk back hour with Kyle. Good afternoon, Kyle.
You know what? I'm taking back my comment on Via Rail. I don't want this thing to go on at all.
Wait a minute. What? We want high-speed rail. No, we love it. I'm going to hang up.
No, because you know what? You've only taken the train twice a year where I've taken it more times than you have.
Well, no, hang on. That's not... Paul asked how many times a week I would take the train to Montreal. How many times do you take it?
I've taken it at least once a month.
Come on. Seriously?
When my grandma was alive and she needed help for me to go help her, I would rather take the train because I can get the train as low as $42 if I get the good deal.
Baloney. $42 to go from Kitchener to Montreal on the train?
If you get the good deal,
wow,
you do that.
Okay.
And that's including taxes, and that's if you get the good deals. Now, I looked online, and the average price to go to Montreal is between $120 to $140 one-way express. So it's going to take you 5 hours, just over maybe 5 hours and 15 minutes to get there max. Okay. So now I'm going to spend billions of dollars to bring it down by 2 hours. I don't want this thing. Like, seriously, like, I, like, if, like, Paul's right. By the time you add the stops, now that 3-hour thing is going to be 4.5 hours. So we spent billions of dollars to bring it down by half an hour to get to Montreal faster. I mean, I could do more work for that $100 by sitting on a train and eating a snack or whatever and doing my work on a laptop versus driving. I don't know about you, but I don't think I could beat that.
How long are you saying it takes you? Because it's been a long time, I confess. My complaints about the train are twofold. One is it's really damn expensive. And two is it really does take an awfully long time. Like, there's not much incentive for me to get on the train as opposed to driving to Montreal.
Are you taking the express, or are you taking the one that goes to Ottawa and then comes back around?
No, I don't think I went through Ottawa. All I remember, it had to be 8 hours, Kyle. It had to be eight, maybe even 10.
But then you didn't take the express train. You took the regular service.
So you're telling me the express train gets me to Montreal how fast?
Five and a half hours.
Come on, I can drive there in that time. The train's always longer than my drive.
But what are you going to do? You're going to drive through the whole time while I could sit on my laptop and get work done while you're driving, and then you got to pull over, go to the bathroom.
No, I get that. I just don't.
And then you got to find parking, and then you got to figure out where you're going to park in Montreal. You got to figure out all that stuff. You still can't beat the price and the time that you can do it versus driving.
All right.
I mean, I'm telling you, Mike. I mean, seriously, it's a bad idea. It's billions of dollars. And then what tracks are you going to use? The same tracks as before? Because I could tell you right now that we're going to sit in Via Rail if they're going to use the same tracks for 2 hours, because you got to let CN Rail or whoever they borrow the rails to go by now, because now you got to sit, right? So, I mean, it's a bad idea. I think I thought about it before and saying yes, and now I'm saying no. So that's my idea. Thanks, Mike.
Okay, Kyle. I appreciate it. Thanks for the call. You're allowed to change your mind. Absolutely. Let me just see here. I'm trying to do a quick look, because I'm sorry, I don't believe that time. Yeah, see, here we go. So I'm just looking, I just did a quick search, and I'm for this, by the way. Like, I love the idea of improved high-speed, high-frequency rail in this country. So I did a quick search at VIA, and I checked for a trip to Montreal on Saturday, and it's 8 hours and 14 minutes. Or I could take the 10-hour and 9-minute option, and it starts at $184. So I find it expensive, and I find it too slow, which is why I'm in favor of make it a 3-hour trip. Like, that's less than half the time it's currently taking. So I understand your cynicism when we talked about it earlier. You don't think that we as a country are capable of big, hairy, audacious goals like this. And certainly if we publicly funded it, it would not be well run, nor would it come in on budget. I get you. But I'm telling you that when I look at this and see an 8-hour trip from Kitchener to Montreal aboard the VIA train, if you could make that a 3.5-hour trip, I'm there. I think it's a great idea. And I really do believe that we have abandoned our roots in rail in this country. Anyway, we'll continue your talk back hour, because this is your hour on the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio. We continue your 12 o'clock talk back hour this Wednesday afternoon, and Mary is on the phone with us. Hello, Mary.
Hello, Mike.
Hi, Mary.
Hi. Beautiful day.
It's lovely.
I'm going to enjoy it.
Good.
Now, I didn't get Kyle's whole thing, but he says he can go on the VIA to Montreal in 5 hours. Which I don't believe.
I don't believe it either. I'm looking at the computer screen that says 8 hours and 14 minutes or 10 hours and 9 minutes. Those are my options.
Well, I will tell you that I'd say it was in the... And I don't think it's improved. It would have been in the 1996, 97-ish. And I took the train home from Ottawa. I left at 10:30. Now, mind you, there was a 2-hour wait in Toronto. And I didn't want my kids to pick me up there, so I waited the 2 hours, got to Kitchener. I didn't get in there till like the nighttime. It's a milk run.
Well, I get it. And that's why there is continued talk about making it high speed and high frequency.
I just want to tell you what that is all about.
I got you. I had the same experience.
I was in the car, and yeah. I heard you talking about access, handicap stuff. You were.
We had a call from Greg, who was very upset when people used the spots.
I want to say something.
All right. Yeah.
I got the handicap thing for my husband because he, he's handicapped. And the thing on the permit says P, which means me as the driver do not qualify to park in the handicap. Otherwise, it's a $5,000 fine. Mike?
Yes.
Mike?
Mary, I get it. But see, some people are still going to park in the spot because they have
pass. That's what I'm trying to tell you, though. But the law is...
I know what the law is, and that's what I said yesterday. But people will still break the law because they think they're going to get away with it.
I've never seen anybody, what do you call them, checking the
exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Anyway, have a great day.
Thanks, Mary.
Have a good beer. Bye.
Bye. I will. I have many good beers, thanks to Nickelbrook, who drops them off today. Alex, good afternoon.
Yeah, the high-speed rail, basically one word sums up the whole thing, and that word is California. So if you want to know how the high-speed rail system works, how with government paying for it, you go look at what's going on in California. That's exactly what we'll have here.
Aren't they just opening one from Vegas to California?
They're trying to build one.
That's what. Okay, I thought did they break ground though? Recently they've done.
Yeah, they've got. I don't know. I don't know the exact numbers. But
okay,
it's like 5 miles of track, and they spent like $30 billion. That's exactly what's going to happen here because you can't put high speed on the existing rails. There's no room for the vias. No,
you're right. I got you. Yeah, for sure.
Right. So that's a brand new rail system, a whole new line.
Yeah.
Dedicated to that. You're talking insane amounts of money.
$12 billion.
It'll be 60. You know that.
I don't disagree.
Well, so I don't know why do you okay it? I just don't.
Why do I okay it? Because I think it is in the public good to have effective, efficient rail like that in a country like this.
Right. You name me one thing the government does.
I get you. I hear you, Alex. And that came up earlier, and your cynicism is well placed. I get it. But
it's not cynicism. It's called realism.
Okay. You can call it realism. Fair enough. Sure. Okay.
And so if a private company wants to do it, okay, fine. All private money, they can charge whatever they want. You go nuts, man. But the government should not be involved at all in any way, shape, or form. We're already broke. In fact, we're so broke, we don't even... Broke would be good. That's how broke we are.
Okay. Right?
So there's no money left. There's nothing. Zero, zippo, nada. Our hospitals are falling apart. Everything's falling apart. And high-speed rail? Really?
Okay. Listen, fair enough. So we'll put you down in the no category. Maybe we're just being aspirational and somewhat optimistic when we talk about it today. I don't disagree it'll cost more than the budget. I don't disagree that we have other competing priorities. I think that we are way behind when it comes to rail infrastructure. And ding dang it, it's what united this country. Why can it not keep us running effectively today? It is the 21st century, after all, last time I checked, but I get it. You want the money put to other things first, and I hear you loud and clear. And by the way, about being broke, you're damn right we're broke. I'm frustrated at how broke we are as well. This is the Mike Farwell Show on 570 News Radio. A busy talkback hour, lots of people with lots of things to say. Back to the phones. JB, why do you keep hanging up and calling back? What the heck?
Oh, I don't know. It's probably my provider.
Okay. It's definitely not Rogers then, is it?
Nope.
Good.
Nope, exactly.
Okay.
Just to pile on Kyle a little bit more, though, we got, he's talking about five, did he say 5 hours?
Yeah, see, he's not telling the truth, is he?
Well, no, he's not. And regardless, so here's the thing. I'm going to Montreal in December for a couple of days. I was looking at it. A round trip from, and that's 5 hours from Toronto, by the way. That's not from Kitchener. You still have to get to Toronto from Kitchener. Round trip from Kitchener to Montreal, it's like 8 hours on the train. So that's two full travel days. And it's like $280 or something like that. A month ago when I booked my trip, I found a flight on WestJet for $330. So why am I going to waste two full days when I've got maybe 3 hours in the air round trip?
I hear you. It's not effective. Yep, I got you. All right, JB, appreciate the call. I don't think Kyle deliberately tried to mislead us. I just think he was misremembering his trip to Montreal aboard the train, both the length of time it took and the price he paid for it.
Nate, you're on the Talk Back Hour. Good afternoon.
Mr. Farwell, how are you now?
Nate Dog, I'm good, and you?
Oh, I had a hectic day yesterday. It's funny that you had a segment on plumbing today. I had two burst pipes in my basement yesterday, so it was not fun. I missed most of your show, and you had a great segment on, too. I managed to listen to the replay of the Shapes of Night.
Shapes of Night made the show. I didn't want to give you the heads up on it. I wanted you to be pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, well, things didn't turn out that way, but I was pleasantly surprised that Dan was on. I was on an episode. It was the fourth episode, and if anyone's interested in talking to Dan, he's very nice to talk to. He makes you feel really comfortable. So if anyone's got stories to tell.
Yeah, but what was your story? What bright, shining light did the aliens abduct you is the question.
I'd have to probably go under hypnosis to figure that out.
Okay.
I don't want to know that. So, but yeah, so it's Devil's Night tonight.
What do you want to remind people that for?
Well,
what are you going to do?
Is there any hockey on?
I don't know.
Rangers aren't playing, right?
No.
Sounds like a good night to watch a movie that you promised me you're going to watch.
Oh, my goodness. You with this goofy Ed and Ted Get Scared or whatever it's called.
It's Bill and Ted versus Evil. Or not Bill and Ted, sorry. Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Tucker and Dale versus Evil. Right.
Yeah, I've been bugging you for 3 years.
Amazon.
It's on Prime, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Yeah, and
Fred and Barney versus Wilma and Betty.
I remember the first time I called in about it, someone called, the next caller after me also highly recommended it as well.
All right, I think you were abducted by those aliens, Nate, just so you know.
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
It makes me special and thick skin to put up with you sometimes.
That's a very good point.
Have a great day, Mike.
Thank you, Nate. You too. Good to hear from you. Tucker and Ted and Ned versus Tucker and Dale. Dale and Tucker. I'm on it. It's horror movie season, after all. We're coming up against the clock for an update from the 570 News Center. Dylan, hang in there. Sean, hang in there. Grant, hang in there. And there's a line open for you if you would like to be a part of our Talk Back Hour. Open lines for you every day from noon until 1 here on the Mike Farwell Show on 570 News Radio. Numbers to reach us here on the Talk Back Hour, 519-570-2545, *570, that's your cell number, or 1-800-570-5715. Pro tip, if you don't get through on one line, try another before they all fill up. We've got one available right now. It's one of the *570 lines. Up to you, but we'd love to hear from you on the Talk Back Hour. Back to the phones. Dylan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mike. I just want to talk about how incredibly stupid this $200 rebate that we're going to be getting is.
Sure.
$200 ain't going to make a huge difference. Obviously, it varies depending on your situation. But why we're giving $200 to every person is in question. Some say it's so Doug gets votes. Doug says it's because it's extra money that they found. What about paying back our debt? Currently our deficit this year. So this year we're going into debt more $3 billion, 16 million people in Ontario, $200 each, $3.2 billion. So he could have used that money to wipe out our deficit. Our current debt in Ontario is about $408 billion. It costs us every year $17 billion in interest to service that debt. That's $17 billion that could be building high-speed rail, hospitals, homeless shelters, da-da-da-da-da. Not only that, it costs our government money to collect taxes. Let's call it 2.5% of the revenue collected is the cost of collecting that money and then distributing it back out to us as a bonus check. 2.5%, $3 billion. That's $75 million that's going to be spent to collect the taxes and then redistribute it in $200 checks to everyone in Ontario. How many homeless shelters can be built for $75 million? The mismanagement of money by this Ford government, who's supposed to be a conservative, I'm not saying other governments do it better, but he's the current government of the day. It blows my mind how incredibly stupid this is.
Dylan, very well said. Appreciate the call. I do wonder where actual conservatives went. It's certainly on the fiscally conservative side of things. But remember, Doug Ford says he has put this province in position to offer those rebate checks.
The difference between our party and the Liberals and NDP, they believe in one thing. Tax the taxpayers to death. Drive companies out of this province. We've taken a different approach. That's why there's 860,000 people working today that weren't working under the Liberal regime. They lost 300,000 jobs.
Dylan, I could not agree with more in terms of the, first of all, impact of the $200. I mean, in this day and age, I'll tell you a quick story, somewhat related. We just had an unexpected car repair, and then we purchased tickets for the CF Gala this weekend, which, of course, is something that we're very supportive of in the Farwell household. And next thing you know, you add up to $1,000, just like that. Poof, like a fart in the wind, there goes $1,000. $200? Yeah, there's that. And then, as Dylan points out, so many other things could be done with that $3 billion. We're going to talk about the $200 rebate check and what might otherwise be done with it on the show tomorrow morning at 10. Shameless plug, looking ahead to tomorrow's show. Sean, you're on the Talkback Hour. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I try not to think about our government. It makes you want to scream sometimes.
Well, sometimes it's therapeutic if you call the station and scream. I did that yesterday.
Yeah. Talking about, anyway, to the train.
Sure, let's talk train.
Yeah. Okay, one guy stole my thunder. Yeah, it is indeed 5 hours from Toronto. It is a lot cheaper. But even with my senior discount having reached the grand age of 65, still $167. Wow. But yeah, but you know what? If you take the GO train, okay, the Kitchener to Toronto's thing adds 3 hours to it. It's 8 hours. But if you take the GO train, it's only an hour and a half to the Union Station. You could take the GO train, then switch to VIA. And that's quicker. But
how long will your layover be?
God only knows.
Okay.
Do you remember the turbo trains and them all catching fire in the past?
I don't remember turbo trains catching fire, no.
Yeah, I do. We used to have turbo trains between Toronto and Montreal. They ended that service because they caught fire.
I'll be darned.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Sean. I appreciate it. That's news to me. I don't remember the turbo trains catching fire, but... You know, I forget things over the years. Let's go next to Grant. Hello, Grant. Oh, there he is. He's got that sinister laugh. Why? You should be in the best mood today.
Why?
Why? Because you got to listen to UC Ahokas. He was funny on the pregame show last night. You got to celebrate another Kitchener Rangers win. You've got to be the happiest guy in Kitchener.
Yeah, they're following his orders, and they're all like the commentators on the TV said, they're all helping each other out. It's not just one person; it's everyone that's chipping in. I thought the first period, maybe the end of the first period, it was kind of dull, but you know, that's fine. You can't be always I'm trying to find a word, but
it can't be exciting all the time.
They've proven that they can find ways to win. Last year, I think we had breakaways against us, and I think they probably learned from that, and it's paying off. I'm going to touch on something else. It's too bad about that girl in Halifax that was she worked at Walmart, and she...
Oh my goodness, in the oven. We don't even need to go there. That's an awful story, Grant. Just awful. It breaks my heart.
And it sounds kind of odd that they didn't find her until the end of her shift or the next day.
Yeah.
So it sounds like someone is that falter?
Well, I don't know about that, and I'm not going to go too far down that rabbit hole, but that is absolutely an awful story. That's quite the U-turn you took there, Grant, talking about the Kitchener Rangers and going to that awful death of the young woman at a big box store in Halifax. It's the 12 o'clock talkback hour. You do get to talk about whatever you want. We're here to answer and listen on the Mike Farwell Show, 570 News Radio. Russell sends an email to Mike at 570news.com. He says, how about everyone who's against the $200 rebate from the provincial government just give it back? More people are complaining about getting money than when they raise or introduce more taxes. I get where you're coming from, Russell, and I appreciate the email to Mike at 570news.com. I think the problem that many of us are having here is that this only serves to reinforce the idea that the government is not a good steward of the public purse, because this is money they've already collected from us, right? So it's gone. We're still here. We're still breathing. So use it for a better purpose. How do you just have this money lying around? And then you're going to, and you are paying us back with our own money. So anyway, but your point's well taken as well. Back to the phones on this talkback hour. Kyle, are you about to talk about a retraction of your earlier statements?
No, I just don't like being called a liar.
Oh.
Where did this guy saying high speed rail is between from where to where?
What we've been talking about since you brought it up, we've been talking about Kitchener to Montreal.
Kitchener to Montreal in 3 hours?
No, we're talking about you. What you said before, Kyle.
No, I didn't live in Kitchener 10 years ago. When I went to Montreal, I went from Toronto to Montreal in 5 hours. I never said anything about Kitchener.
Okay, well, I just looked it up online, and it's 8 hours.
Because that's the thing. If we're talking about the guy on the thing said high speed rail is 3 hours from Toronto to Montreal, correct? And I said you could do it in 5 hours from Toronto to Montreal. And you Googled and you said, well, no, from Kitchener to Montreal is 8 hours. I never said anything about Kitchener to Montreal. I said Toronto to Montreal is 5.5 hours, and you could do it. I looked online, and I sent to you on your on Facebook. I said to you, you could do it within 5.5 hours, and I looked online, and you could do it for $99 today is the lowest price I found.
Okay, $99, Toronto. I'm sorry, I'm stuck in Waterloo region. I always think about Waterloo region first.
I didn't live in Waterloo region then. I lived in Niagara.
I understand. So how did you get from Niagara to Toronto?
I took the GO Transit, but Via Rail doesn't own GO.
No, I know. Well, this is what I'm just trying to think of the whole trip. And anyway, I think
it's
we should
an
have
hour
high.
From Burlington, it's an hour from Burlington to Grimsby. No, it's an hour from Burlington to Toronto, and then from there it's about a 30 to 45 minute layover, and then from there it's about a 5.5 hour train ride from Toronto to Montreal.
All right. So you, but and you
I'm
remain opposed to the idea of building higher speed.
If it's Toronto to Montreal and they're taking only a 2 hours off and they're spending billions of dollars, absolutely.
Yeah, I got you. Okay.
Okay, thanks, Mike. I was just trying to clear the air. I'm not a liar. I'm just...
We know you're not. I got you. Okay, thank you. Yeah, you're right. Kyle's talking Toronto, too. And I've only ever gone Kitchener, too, because I love my hometown and I'm never leaving until it gets too expensive here. Darren, good afternoon. You're on the talkback hour.
Oh, hey, good afternoon. Just a couple comments on trains for me.
Sure.
Up until more recently, I was in a commuter down into the Toronto area. Worked downtown, worked near Square One, worked at Trafalgar and QEW. And I find that the idea of the all-day GO isn't as helpful as it could be or people make it out to be, because it's really too narrow. It just goes downtown. There's talk of maybe a northern terminal somewhere, but that doesn't exist right now. And the same thing with the high-speed rail. I really think it'd be a nice to have, but not a need to have. And my follow comment to this is, I've never heard of a conversation about, what would in the region be phase, I don't know, 3, 4, maybe an east-west LRT in going Kitchener-Waterloo. Because I really wonder if you have a sense of, if we could ever get a sense of what percentage of the population of Waterloo region travels down the 401 to Toronto every day, as opposed to travel within the region. And I would really honestly think in my mind is that the money's better spent within transit in the region only. And that's my comment.
It's a great point, Darren, and I appreciate that call. And I can tell you this much. And look, I'm not sure I'm going to see it in my lifetime. I'm already skeptical of phase 2 of light rail, which would continue the north-south route, right? Phase 2 Planned, costed, working on it right now at $4.6 billion from Fairview Mall in Kitchener to the Ainslie Street Terminal in Cambridge. That would be phase two. So east-west, and forgive me, even though I grew up here, I'm still as confused as anybody about which way our streets go. And I know this particular street runs north-south, but I think it would actually be east-west because it would definitely cross the existing north-south track. Anyway, phase two, Fairview Mall to South Cambridge. It is my understanding that phase three, yes, phase three of light rail would run along Ottawa Street from basically the Sunrise Center at Ottawa and Fisher-Hallman out to very close to the airport in Breslau. Just let that sink in. Again, I know they call it Ottawa Street South and Ottawa Street North, but I think that would satisfy the east-west that you're talking about. Way down, like, way down the road. But if you consider the extensions of Ottawa Street out past Lackner, etc., that would be a good link to get you to another transportation hub, i.e. our regional or slash international airport in Breslau. Phase three. I don't think I'm going to see it in my lifetime. I'm not sure I'm going to see phase two, but that's what I've heard would be the next phase beyond getting us from Fairview Mall to South Cambridge. Just for some consideration about intercity transit. This is the Mike Farwell Show, your 12 o'clock talkback hour on 570 News Radio. Four minutes away from 1 o'clock, an update in the 570 News Center, and then Now You Know with Rob Snow taking you through until 3 this afternoon. But that leaves many minutes for us to continue our talkback hour. Greg, you are next. Good afternoon.
Hi, Mike. Question for you about this $200 thing. The pot of money that it's coming from, what are they deeming that? Excess or?
I have no idea. Doug Ford's personal bank account? I don't know.
But I'm just thinking, like, okay.
General revenues, probably.
Okay, but at the same time, there's a huge debt out there for charging interest, right?
Of course.
Okay, so I'm just wondering, like, how do you have anything excess if you owe, like, a business at the end of a year either makes a profit or a loss? A person either has a net worth plus or minus. Like, how can you have excess when you, and negative at the same time? What am I missing?
Well, you're missing government finances. It's a little bit different than how we operate our household. So they can run deficits and pay interest and service debt and still give us money back.
Okay, I guess I won't argue with it. It just doesn't really like
it shouldn't make sense. Greg, it shouldn't make sense. It doesn't make sense to the average person, and you're a good old average person, and yeah, it just defies logic.
Yeah, like to start saying, oh yeah, I got excess money. Let's see, what are we going to do with it now? Meanwhile, you owe half your, you know. Anyways, yeah, okay, just, I thought I was missing something, but
nope,
all right,
you're not.
The government's different than a person. Good enough.
Okay. Thanks, Greg. Appreciate it. I wish I could help you more. I really do. Because it frustrates me. Like, what would be the first thing, if you won the lottery, what's the first thing many of us would do? Pay off our mortgage, right? Anyway, I could go on and on, but I can't because I got to get to Andre's call. And Andre, I got like 60 seconds for you, my friend.
Very kind of you. Well, I don't know, Cal, but I can say one thing, Mike, and you will agree. A guy that admits that eats ketchup on everything is not a liar.
Yeah, it was just very confusing thinking about Kitchener instead of Niagara or Toronto and all that stuff. Yeah,
it's a miscommunication.
Kyle's a good guy, except for the ketchup on everything. Yeah,
that's why. But the thing I don't like, and I will agree with all of you, is this $200. Hey, you know what? Yeah, it would make me do good today and tomorrow. But, you know, we can do so much better with it, especially like everybody says, we are in debt. We do have needs, not wants. We do have needs, and it would be a better place to go. But, Mike, you know, I feel it was very stressful a little bit with the people today. So I tell you, you did a great person job. Get out there, take some sun, enjoy the moment. And one last comment. Hey, Google, unpause. This is for all of you.
All right. All of us get silence, I guess. Andre, We gotta run. I will go and enjoy some sunshine this afternoon, and I will remind you again, since Andre brought up the $200 rebate checks, what could we be doing with that money? We'll talk about it on the show tomorrow morning at 10. Give it some thought. Maybe you have a better idea, a different idea that you'd like to bring to the show tomorrow. That's just among the many things we'll be talking about on the show. Also on the show tomorrow, the upside of adversity for our kids, building some resilience, you say. That'll be on the show tomorrow when we reconvene at 9. Devin Robertson is our guy on the other side of the glass. My name is Mike Farwell. Now You Know with Rob Snow is coming up right after this update from the 570 News Center. Bye for now.